Today I've received an apology from the chairperson, Ms. Mashweni Rutina Dimenya. She is unable to attend this meeting. Therefore, according to the National Assembly rules, the committee must elect one of its members as an acting chairperson. So, now I am going to request for members to raise their hand and nominate one of its members to be acting chairperson of today's meeting. Member Seki? Thank you, Mr. Seki. Can I have a second for the nomination, please?
Mr. Malumata.
Thank you. My name is Kitopa Malumata. I second the name.
Thank you, Mr. Malumata. Mr. Malachi, are you available to take the chair, the acting chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, is there any further nominations? Okay, with the absence of further nominations, I then declare Mr. Malachi as an acting chairperson for today's meeting. I then hand over to Mr. Malachi to take the meeting forward. Thank you.
Northwest and the Western Cape will make the presentation. Thanks.
Morning, in the parliament. With me, I have the MEC Mira from Northwest. She's sitting in the corner. And then the Northern Cape, MEC and Rifas. I just want to check whether we have Western Cape. I know the MEC is not here, but no one is saying, okay. It's only two provinces that are here, Chair, at the moment. But I'm going to introduce from the... Will you introduce yourselves, the National DPC Chair, will you introduce your team? And I have... the acting DG will join us, Chair. They are still busy preparing for the talk today. DPC Chair.
Thank you, Diem. Morning, Chair. Morning, honorable members. Chair, my name is Neville Chenya. I work for the National Department of Human Settlements, responsible for affordable rental and social housing. With me, I have our colleagues, Mr. Mary Lekara from the Office of the DG, Mr. Paul Ndere from the Office of the DM, Ms. Faith Akwana from the Office of the DM, Mr. Paul Masemula, I'm bringing order, Chair. From the Izal PLO in the Ministry, I've got Felisa Makasi from the Office of the DM as well, and then that's it, Chair, that's the colleagues from the National Department, and then just also next to me is Mr. Kumlani Mbulawa, who is the Housing Development Agency representative. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. The members of the proposed committee were here to present the last three provinces except the Western Cape. We are here invited by you, Chair, or the whole committee. issues that are on the agenda, Chair, that you requested from us is the removal of the asbestos, the informal settlements, the eradication over financial prisoners, and then the other issues that are on the agenda, Chair, is the MINNET decision. This was the MINNET decision, Chair, that we should come up with the number of mud houses and also check the number of asbestos. Thank you for joined by acting DG Chair. They know, Chair, they were given letters, all the provinces were given letters. They are ready, Chair, to present. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Northern Cape. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chair and good morning to the Deputy Minister. All the honorable members of the committee as well as my colleague MC of Northwest and our acting DDGs and senior officials from the department as well as HDB. Honorable Chairperson, I'm Bill Clifas, I'm the member of the Executive Council responsible for Cox Head and Northern Cape. With me is Mr. Dasky Boyson. Is the acting chief director responsible for human settlements, as well as the head of ministry is also part of the delegation, Mr. Mokushe and Mr. Mulefe is part of human settlements. What we agreed, Chairperson, in terms of the letter that we received from the minister that we are supposed to come and present this morning to the committee, in terms of the our plans to remove asbestos, eradication of the mud houses, progress upon upgrading, and auditing informal settlements and the challenges, and then also we've covered in the report title deeds and challenges with provision of sites and land. Can I then give over to Mr. Boyson with your indulgence, Chairperson, to take us through the presentation?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and other members. We will present another report think it was a wild year. Chairperson, I have summer in terms of both grants and that expenditure. You will notice that so far we've spent about 121% of both grants combined, both grants in the agency and the UISP. For example, if you look at agency, the cycle budget for the drawdown was 8 million. We spent about 51. USPG was 21 million, we spent about 26. So the percentage, the second last column from the right, indicates the percentage. Also, the percentage total of the overall allocation. Chairperson, this is a high level summary in terms of our target and what we've achieved. I don't know if I was talking about 852 with a budget of 107. For quota one, Chair, we did not spend anything. We spent 72 million, but we don't have target. We don't have target to report because on the side, we report by the end of the financial year when there's water, sanitation, and general. So Chair, there is work that is happening. And then integrated residential development units, our target was 100 for the year. The total budget was 18 million, just over 18.6 million. Our target was 74. We achieved 45 with a budget of over 4 million. And then consolidation subsidies we don't do. Rural housing subsidies. Target 70, budget 14 million, quarterly target was 20. There is no achievement. There's a budget of about, or an expenditure of 806,000. Chair, you will notice that there's no achievement in the quota as well. It's a work in progress. It's out of the various stages of development. In terms of CRUs, we don't have a target. We were exempted by the National Fund from Berlin CRUs now because recently the minister handed over about 458 units in Kimberley of CRUs. And then Chair and Atlas, we don't have a Atlas project. We only have units. And then our target was 20 with a budget of about 2 million. Our quarterly target is about 25 in terms of all the quarters. We managed to achieve 30 and then with an expenditure of 147. Chair, our plea is that we have no informal settlement. We have a separate spreadsheet on informal settlement for the detailed breakdown of expenditure and target. Proceed to the next one. In terms of our challenges, Chairperson and honorable members, you will notice our main cry is lack of adequate budget to meet our bulk challenges, to meet our intention to buy suitable land. And mainly in the Northern Cape, you don't have a lot of suitable land. So for us, those are the three key challenges. Number one is the budget. To address bulk and also the issue of bulk and water structure in the province. On a baseball chapter, in 2015 we did a study and the table that Chair represents the district, the housing stock assessed in terms of the numbers, you will see in total it's about 110. Yeah, it's about 136,879, and then in terms of roofs, it's about 20,328. And our focus Chairperson is on the roofs. So that's where we stand with the roofs. We have a total for walls and roofs for outdoor buildings, but our opposing what has been put on us. So like I said, it's about 20,328. And then the total check was that we need a total value of about just over 1 billion to sort out those issues in another case. Chair, when the minister approved our business plan for current financial year, we had a request to say please exempt us for the current financial year so that we can package project better in the next financial year. So as we speak, Chairperson, we have a project plan which includes warehouses assessment and packaging by the end of the current financial year. We should have made progress in terms of that. In the past year, we have about 2 projects. One is less than 150 in the Namakwa area. We are doing IRDP there, about 20 units. There's a budget, but no expenditure check. My explanation is, and Chair and honorable members, we are not making it an excuse. The issue of procurement, which was put on hold, set us quite back. But we are in the process of finalizing, and we are confident that we will meet the target. The second one is Mahobia. It's in the JTG area. The program is in Rura. The budget is 4 million, and there's nothing but combined Chairperson is about 14 million that we budgeted. And that we are confident that come end of financial year, we would have moved it. Again, on matter of Chair, I spoke about the audit and I showed the project plan in terms of what we intend to do. Currently, our team is in the JTC area, which is a rural district where we have most of the matter houses. The work is about to be completed. So there is progress there. Chair, we want to reaffirm our commitment to the Minister and to MANMEC to say that we will prioritize matter houses. For example, this year, like I said, it's 2 projects. We might add one or more, but we don't want to refer to it now, Chambers. It will be in the revised business plan where we will have 3. There's one in Pantex Plan, but we are waiting approval of the revised business plan from the National Department. So, but we only speak to what is in our approved business plan. But it's just to demonstrate that we are looking at other projects to get progress. Chair, we refer all the time to lack of funding. We welcome and we accept and we will implement. But with our mega allocation, it becomes quite difficult because it then means that we have to sacrifice somewhere. And we understand and also accept again, members, that as a deputy minister, obviously, it's something that we should have done and planned for in the past. But our budget is the reality, but we prioritize and ensure that we do that. And in doing that, we will prioritize the vulnerable groups as well, women, youth, disabled, and so on, in terms of allocation of houses. We were supposed to have completed this, and we included this bullet point in the marketing process. It's a commitment that we made to MANMEC when our business plan was approved to say that by June we would have been done, but unfortunately Chair, I have reported on the first bullet we asked the advice, and by the end of the financial year we will be done. Chair of the project. Currently we're reconciling projects classified as blocked on HSS. According to our records, they are not blocked. We need to close them off. And we are in the process of conducting a physical verification in that regard. Once we're done with the physical verification, then we will determine if there are any beneficiaries who are linked to this project. if they are alive in terms of our records, or if they is, we will definitely prioritize them. Members for entitled is we are doing this bad in terms of performance of the province. You will notice our target is about 5,000 for the different categories, pre-94, post-94, post-2014, and under new. For example, our target for the first quarter was 620. We only managed to achieve about a meager 71. And then our budget, just over 1 million, we just spent over 423,000. In the next slide, I will explain the reasons for the situation that we are in and what measures are we putting in place to ensure that we meet that target of 5,000, because the Minister in Mimic and the Deputy Minister approved our purpose plan on the basis that we meet at least 5,000 charities registered. We don't want to make excuses, but these are some of the main challenges that we are experiencing. And they are mostly directed at municipalities. If you look, for example, in terms of FICA documents, municipalities are giving us problems or against us. In terms of registration, municipalities are supposed to sign certain documents, which they don't, and they take forever. There's also the issue of where projects are built on public land, and the land belongs to public also rural development. It takes quite a while to sort out the transfer and to be in a position to register an issue title deed. And then there's an issue of general land, chairperson. This relates to mainly old projects where we have issues. And then we only received or had an office established in the Northern Cape in terms of dates. But there are still systems and processes that must be normalized and expedited. And then the last one, Chairperson, there's a process that you need to follow in terms of those dates which are lost. Our approach is that we mainly took districts which can give us about 3,500 to 4,000 title deeds at the end of the financial year. The first one is a Transvaal district, where we can do about 2,600. And then the second one is Namakwa, where we can do 1,400 that we've targeted. Chair, for the intervention, we are in the process of finalizing the appointment of conveyancers. And as I indicated earlier when I referred to performance, the Constitutional Court also set us like 3 months to 4 months back in terms of procurement. But we are putting measures in place so that by the first week of October, we should have conveyancers in our 5 districts. Our approach is that each district must get a conveyance and will focus on a particular district so that we can expedite and ensure that we perform. This is what I referred to when I spoke on the first slide, to say that we speak in detail to informal settlements. Chair, you will notice the first column is your municipality, the town, project description, and the type of program we are using. UISBS stands for services, and the informal settlement program. And then the services that we said we would do in total is about 600. And you will notice that our UISBG grant is mainly spent on 2 districts, actually 2 municipalities in the Northern Cape, which are big. One is in Kimberley, so likely, and the one is in Upington, Dufferin Creek, where most of the money is going. So to date, Chair, we've completed about 979 against the target of 600. didn't get a budget. It was about 37. Up to April we spent, didn't get a total target for the check. In total, for the government, the target is 1245 for services. Our delivery is 1017, and the budget was 81,272,000, which is unfair. Up to April, we had spent about 9 million, almost 30. In terms of an audit on informal settlements, we have jointly developed a strategy with the National Department on our informal settlements and our response plan to the settlements. We've got about 162 informal settlements with a total household size of about 79,000. And then below, we break down the number of settlements and the number of households per district. You will note the short term rates here. 12 informal settlements, 20,734 households. Francis Bar, 43 informal settlements, just over 17,000 households. Bixit Asene, 31, and then 6,000, almost 7,000 households. And then Namakwa, some of the 2 informal settlements and 6,000 households. Saitama Cloud, 54 informal settlements with about 28,000 households. Chair, our recommendation is for the portfolio committee to note the progress that we've made, also to note the challenges that we have and the measures that we want to put in place to expedite performance of both grants, especially in terms of the 3 areas Deputy Minister mentioned, tax rates, mud houses, and asbestos. Chair, I'm sure come end of the financial year, our picture will look much better. And our performance will have improved quite substantively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Northern Cape. Northwest.
Thank you very much, Chair, members of the committee, my Honourable Deputy Minister, my colleague MEC Fass, the team from the Provincial Government Department, the team from the Northern Cape, and my team from the Northwest Document Settlement. Honourable Chair, my name is Lena Micha, I am the MEC for the Department of Court, Cooperative Governance, Human Settlement and Traditional Affairs. We are going to present, Honourable Chair, the request of the Portfolio Committee, our performance in terms of mud houses, in terms of eradication of asbestos, and also including the blocked project in the province. We must indicate on our chair just before we present that indeed we do have challenges in terms of the 3 areas as indicated, but obviously, as also the portfolio committee has requested, there are plans that we have developed in ensuring that we eradicate the 3, because we really need to give dignity to our people in ensuring that we provide them with a housing development and block those projects, and ensure also that we also take them out of the mud houses they are staying in. What we must indicate on our chair is that all along, as and when we provide houses to our people, our priority has always been people that are living in mud houses. The report will then further indicate that beyond that, what is it that we also have plans moving forward. With me, I have the acting HOD of the department, Ndate Mashifo, who is going to lead the presentation, but also we've got the Chief Director of Human, on Housing Development, Mr. Bidi, We also have Mr. David Mose Mashabane, who is the director. Also relevant to that, we also have Austin Neo, who is the director for communications. We also have Mr. Bodise, who is the PFO on human settlement, the acting chief, the acting head of the department, who therefore lead our presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable MEC, and good morning to the chairperson of the committee and members of the committee, and colleagues, and my colleagues, just MEC on the introduction. We also have Dr. Yamazan, who is a commercialist, who has in the picture of this office to provide great management support in terms of the implementation of our interest in a settlement program. Chairperson, we have been a waste of time, the policy line. I want to go straight to the detail of the presentation. The first part, what is the focus is on the summary of the performance of Water One and the whole plan that we received as a program with the agencies in which for this financial year we received 1.2 million, which the Water One we have spent 141 million on six. We are left with 1.1 million. The performance of the HSD translates to 11%, with underperformance with a variance of 14% in the first quarter. And the ISUP is 379 million, which was spent 111.7 million with a balance of 267. Which translates to 29% with an overperformance with a variance of 4%. In terms of savings delivery share, we have plans to achieve in terms of units 689 for the first quarter. And for the first quarter, instead of that, we have achieved a half of that, which is 291 units, which would get to the details of that. But in terms of savings, that we have plans to deliver 1,273, which in terms of how we report them, we have reported zero. But we have seen that expenditure for the work done today is 111 well, yes, we have to indicate, Chair, that the project of the international in Rustenburg, which is for attention system, it has been completed, which gives us 3,500 set inside. We are just currently auditing the final 100 in terms of whether should be made payment. So this is to emphasize that in the second quarter, we would have even overachieved, we would have achieved by close to 500 sites, and we are currently implementing 8,500 sites in Freiburg in two extensions, in Freiburg Extension 29 and hopefully Extension 1, which also we are making progress. We show by the end of the third quarter we would have completed half of those service sites. But just to emphasize on the units, Chair, we...
Chair, I'll put us to raise your hand first.
I was just looking to the steps that let me pass them. I was just giving context. Yes. The next slide talks about the issue that relates to the asbestos. On the first for this financial year, we have not put any targets, as the ministry has indicated, on how we've been attending to asbestos, but we have being able to engage with the municipalities, and we have received numbers, areas where the municipalities would want us to attend in terms of that processes. We are finalizing the verification of the numbers received, which would then be able to factor in the business plan for part of the implementation. And the following slide provides that details of the and verify statistics that we got from municipalities when we were engaging with them in line with the process. we just a summary for the purposes of which chair will produce the number that is given to 4,110, for the green housing 212, and the following is the breakdown in terms of the information that we have received from a number of municipalities, which others are finalizing their input. In terms of the mud houses for the financial year 2022-23, we have allocated 520 of the mud houses that we will be dealing for this financial year in the three districts where we have already received an indication of the need for us to deal with the mud houses, which for this financial year we could have buy 70.6 million. To deal with that, but we have, as the ministry emphasized, shared to report that since the beginning of the MPSF for the state administration, we have already been able to deliver almost 2,500 houses, which among them include the education of mud houses. But our approach back then was more dealing with them within the context of rural housing development progress, without separating whether these ones are mud houses, these ones are sheds, these ones are so forth. So moving forward, we have then resolved to begin to separate and be able to quantify in terms of those numbers. On the block project for this financial year, we have planned to address 247 units at the value of 38 million, with the first quarter which has planned 61, which we have for the first quarter we have already planned spend 4.9 million of the 8.8 million which has planned to deal with these houses. We have not yet been able to complete in terms of unblocking, in terms of finalization of addressing the block houses, hence we can not to report an achievement until those houses are being handed over to their owners. But it should be noted that to date, Chair, of what we have assessed from 2017, we have been able to address about 1,500 units, which we have been able to address in terms of the block houses. And we're looking forward to be able to deal with the new ones that are coming as a result of some of the developers being liquidated and others leaving sites as a result of the increase on the material on site, you know, since the COVID-19. But we are finalizing the forensic investigation with assistance of the NHDRC so that we can be able to deal with that. The following slide is the breakdown, Chair. Without going through them, the members will see how many projects we have already implemented in Canada, in Dr. KK, what have been the challenges that led to some of those block houses. We know that Dr. KK is one of the districts which has been highly affected by thermite. So this gives a breakdown and the rationale about and how far we are with regards to those projects. The following slide here gives also a detail in terms of the municipality and specific projects, which I'm sure honourable members they might be aware that they do have the oversight on some of those that we have actually been dealing with from the beginning in Canada and the other regions as we go to the next slide. All informal settlements are paid in the ranch. We want to report that Northwest has probably 136 informal settlements that we have assessed through the NUS program up to 2021 financial year. Today we have been able to develop 109 upgrading plans with the support of National since the inception in 2014. The only thing that we are finalizing in terms of the gas currency is the provincial strategy on how we link the issue of informal settlements overall with the development strategy of the province. But we have also been able to upgrade up to phase three of the seven settlements, which into a phase three where we invest in terms of providing those settlements with internal services, for example, expansion. Ching, which is section 9 and 10, which is part of what we call the N14 development. We are currently now busy with processing to put in place the bulk emissions and the top structures. Since we have finalized the phase in terms of the internal services. And we've also done in Ganana and other areas within our problem. Currently, we have been dealing with the assessment of the eight new settlements, in particular, in the issue of Matosana with the assistance of the SBA. We have currently received requests from KB Bank to attend about 15 new settlements. And then we have also established a forum where better coordination of the intervention of the department in dealing with the upgrading of the informal settlement can be coordinated and discussed with one of the facilities. The following chair just gives a breakdown of what the interim plan is more. We are making reference to the exercise where the studies have been done by the province and interventions have started. Just to give an example on the interim, if you look at the Rustenburg on phase 3, we are making reference to what we have been doing the WITIPOM as we are finalizing the WITIPOM part of the expansion 16. And on the upgrading plans, the one that we have done jointly with the National Department in terms for the implementation. The interim phase helps us in terms of the pipeline as we deal with planning to deal with the informal settlements as part of upgrading. On the title deed tenure of security chair, not because of us and the Northern Cape who are neighbors, but to emphasize that we have experienced the same challenge. I think in the previous years, the department is rolling out the housing development program. We have allowed developers not to prioritize the title deeds, and that has led to a lot of backlog within the province. With the 3-1994, we have assigned tasks to our Northwest Housing Corporation, which is more like an SDA within the province, which are assisting us in dealing with those. And for the other categories, we have resolved to put in place a panel of convenience as chair, which we, in the next quarter, they will be rolling out the program of title deeds because of the developers that failed us on that one. We have already written letters to them to give consent to say they are taking over the part of convincing, in particular for developers who have not yet been appointed the convincing firm. Our belief is that while we need to deal with title deeds, we only need a site and the name of the beneficiary. We don't need a complete structure to provide our people with title deeds. So hence we opted to use our own panel to put the panel in place of convincing that we can use it so they can help us to inquire and speed up the issue of addressing the challenges in the shelter of within our belief that the 14 targets as part of the MGSL target. We want to briefly, as the last slide, share at high level the challenges we have experienced tomorrow, especially on the poor performance on quarter one or on the HSTG. We want, despite the challenges of development that which were carried over here about units from the last financial year, about 3,500, and before the beginning of the financial year, we have appointed 1,100 sales for the unit, and which we are also finalizing the other category of the appointment by the end of the second quarter. But to make sure that we are able to recover on the first quarter and to so that in the second quarter we have done, we have developed a recovery plan which have shared with the National Department. And we have also put in place a monetary mechanism which is met or meet on a weekly basis where the Chief Director, Mr. B.B. and Dr. Nyamata are co-chairing in ensuring that we strictly monitor the implementation of the recovery plan to make it implementable. Of course, the delays, so we have lost quarter one in terms of procurement when we've been getting guidelines from our National Treasury, but we are back on track. So we are finalizing appointment of 17 projects, they are at an advanced stage. They will be able to be given documents. They are submitting them like next week. And from there, the committees will be out of town to finalize the evaluation. So by the end of the second quarter, we have completed the appointment of those and we handle right to them. In terms of the title deeds, like I emphasized earlier, that we have put into the parallel consensus as an intervention to frustrate the issue of making sure that we all have the title deeds, more especially for entities which are post 1994. The challenge of bulk, like the weather and the cave, we are currently engaging particularly with the municipalities and DWS so that they can be able to meet us halfway from the investment we make. So we've made investment in terms of housing and internal services check, but we are not able to record them as completions because of we can't connect them to the aspect of bulk. So we are using part of our grants for the last bulk, but it's not adequate, so we are allowed to have 5%. By the DWS and the other authorities are coming to the party, more especially in Dr. RSM and not only the Rema, where the district is about the water services authority. The issue of the land release, they are just busy with stationary finalizing the guidelines, and I'm sure that what in the next critical meeting we will be able to recommend you know, the guidelines for the leadmet to then send it off. But finally, in this first conference, we have finalized our strategy in terms of the upgrading of informal settlement to ensure that the pipelining is, you know, for the planning so that we can be able to move with our, and I just mentioned that strategy, Chair. We want to get to a situation where we identify an informal settlement and we implement all the phases through one capacity contractor who will do township establishment, who will put internal services over in balance. People can even put top structures and different typologies so that when people are headed over with the houses, you know that services are there, you will not have a situation where houses are not occupied and being paralyzed because of the annual services. With that, Honorable Chairperson, members, and the MEC, thank you very much. It's the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. I don't see the Western Cape here. I think what we'll do, we'll open for questions from the members and inputs. Then when the Western Cape comes, we'll give them an opportunity. If they are in the position, you respond to questions or to my, what I'm directing? I don't want to check.
Questions.
The consensus is that we'll drink in the Western Cape after the questions. Okay, thank you. In that order.
Okay.
Before you speak, before your head goes to the mic, you must first go up. Then to the mic.
I want to know that what are the main challenges
in relation to the eradication of mud houses in each province, Northern Cape and also Northwest, since the Western Cape is not here. And also, what is the status of the asbestos removal plan for the Northern Cape? Could the department provide information on the responses to the challenges of land invasion, illegal occupation, and the construction mafia in the Western Cape? But this question is based on within the Western Cape, because I want to know related to the Western Cape. Another question: What is the audit being conducted in the Northwest Province on the number of block projects, and how is the department, national and also provincial department, responding to the challenge of poor performance by contractors? I thank you, Chairperson.
In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable has covered me in some of the questions that I wanted to ask. I will start with Northwest. How is the department, I'm referring to the National Department of Human Settlement and the Provincial Department of Human Settlement, responding to the challenge of poor performance by contractors? Northwest, have you put in place any plan to deal effectively with the performance of these poor contractors? And are you still using their services after they've incurred wasteful expenditure, which led to the department blocking the project? I don't want to repeat the questions that she has already mentioned or questioned. What are the main challenges in relation of mud houses and asbestos houses in the West? Because from your presentation, it is clear that it is possible we are going to go to the end of the financial year 2022 to 2023 without you starting or without any progress being made with regard to the eradication of asbestos houses and the mud houses. You don't even have a clear idea of how many asbestos houses you're supposed to eradicate in Northwest. You don't even have a clear idea of how many mud houses you are supposed to eradicate. And you don't have a target. But right now, as we speak, it is the third quarter. So I don't know how you're going to deal with eradication of, effectively deal with eradication of asbestos houses or mud houses if you are clueless about what you're supposed to do. Northern Cape, what are the main challenges in relation to the mud houses in Northern Cape? What is Northern Cape? What is the progress made by the Department of Human Settlement regarding the eradication of asbestos structures? And when did eradication of asbestos roofs and structures commence in Northern Cape so far? And then how many asbestos roofs have you eradicated, if you did, eradicate any of these asbestos structures or roofs? And then, why has the Department of Human Settlement in Northern Cape not yet replaced any mud houses in Williston and Mahobi Village, or commenced the replacement of mud houses? The reason I'm asking this question is because in your presentation, it is not stated how many mud houses you have already eradicated. You do not have targets. With regard to block projects, there's no information in your presentation that is provided with regard to blocked projects. And if you are busy with the process of unblocking the blocked project, what are the reasons for you as a department in Northern Cape which led to you blocking the project, the housing project? And then what consequence management have you applied to the contractor that led to you unblocking the project? And then I suppose you do have a team that is conducting monitoring and evaluation of projects from the beginning when the project is starting towards the end of the project. Why did your team of monitoring take long to realize that, you know, there is wasteful expenditure that is incurred or that is in process when the contractors were busy building? Why didn't they intervene on time? This question also applies to Northwest. And I also want to know if you are still using the services of these contractors and what consequence management have you applied to these contractors, both Northwest and Northern Cape? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Two important things that I liked in the presentation of Northwest. The specialist project, the how you dealt with mud houses in the past. To me, it's very important. If you could share with us how did you deal with it, because the way I heard you, it's like you were dealing with the mud houses as and when there was a need. Now it's a need that is projected in terms of your min-max agreement, which to me, the first one, in my view, takes us forward. Those are the two important things. I'm not sure whether Chairperson, as a member of the committee, I could request permission to spend a week in one of his offices. Let me spend a week in the HMC of Northwest and work with them in my oversight. I'm not sure whether there's something like that in Parliament, but I really would like to spend a week, if I'm allowed. I'm already inviting myself to a meeting. If I'm allowed, I'll talk to the chair after the meeting. Because, you know, there are some of the things, Chair, that we need to go deeper for us to move forward. And maybe it's the interest I had with those two points. But on performance on you, I mean, HSDG, you are 11%. On the performance of ISUPG, it is 100. You are actually 9. You are 4% above your target. Probably you will indicate further. I mean, your challenges, you did talk about performance and the like, which takes me back to the project planning. And generally, DM, we know that there will be a first quarter. We know for the 5 years that there will be a first quarter. And almost all provinces, including national, on the first quarter, there's a very low performance. Now why? It goes back to project management. On the title deed, county in Northwest administered the pre-1994. For Northern Cape, I saw the pre-1994, they are targeting 500 per annum. The view is that these numbers should be dwindling. If you, let's say for the coming 5 years, you are targeting 500, times 5 is 2,500. Now, when are we going to end to deal with the pre-1994 tragedies? Maybe we should ask a general number from the minister, DM, and the department. Are we moving down on this pre-1994 or not? Mud houses and asbestos, maybe the approach is similar to the Northwest or how they did it in the past. Even to Northern Cape. How? Because this is a budget at time. In the past, it is an emergency, I assume, where there are floods, storms, and then you respond different. And on informal settlements, DM, let's all agree that informal settlements, they are jumping the queue in the main. Those are at work, not terrible one, because they are twitching every day, probably. But in the main, they are jumping the queue. How do we deal with this issue? And these informal settlements, are they informally settling in the land occupied by government? I mean, owned by government? Or there's a process after they've occupied, where you have to buy at exorbitant prices sometimes this late. And then you have to respond to that. Just the last 2 points, Chair. Bulk infrastructure, it's also about cleaning. Because DM and MEC, if we know that we are going to build houses at Pinakamuzi in Mulema, 20 houses, and then all of a sudden we are stopping because there's no bulk. Why did we start from the first place? We started because there was a promise, or there was a commitment, or there was an assumption that automatically houses are linked to bulk infrastructure, which we never planned. So in my view, where I'm sitting, that is not a reasonable reason for where I'm sitting, that the reason for us to unable to complete the project is because of our infrastructure. It's not reasonable. If I was a manager, I would take that manager to a disciplinary hearing, the project manager who started that process, to say, you should have known that you can't start a project in the absence of a commitment on the infrastructure, bulk in particular. So, to this old man, that's not a reason. I like the land release, which is the last point here. The land release issue, because every time in our informal engagement, we are saying this issue of building houses is not sustainable, let's try to skew our budget towards land release, and I want to support that, Northwest and Northern Cape. Northern Cape sometimes, I assume, look, sometimes because of the layman's environment, but because there's huge land, I never thought there would be challenges on land in the Northern Cape because of the size of the crop, unlike how deep, where we have to build high rise. So the land release issue, DM, I think it's one priority that we need to fast track, in particular on those provinces that are rural than building these units, because people build. We should make a study in the long term, well, not in the long term, but in the short term, to check after we have built an RDP, how many of those RDP are still standing as RDPs? Because many of them are being changed to be something else. So the land lease is very important for us to can allow people to build their houses in terms of their financial. It can still come up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Another please.
No, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. DMM, please. Delegation from various brothers and colleagues. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the two presentations and say, Northwest, you seem to be concerned about people-driven development. The manner in which you produce these houses aligned with the targets that you set somewhere, they really invite my confidence. And obviously, it will be even off the map to keep it up. Northern Cape, there are some few clarity seeking questions that if you help me there, I think they will also assist. See, you are saying under the residential development program side, the department has no planned target for quarter one. However, the expenditure was incurred of amount of 72 million. What was the expenditure for if there were no targets for the quarter? Out of the target of 20 rental housing subsidy units planned for quarter one, the zero targets were achieved even though there were an expenditure amount of 866,000. What was the expenditure for if there were no targets achieved? Because there's no way that the money can just disappear, yet they are not deliverables. It must be a concern of some sort. And I'm happy that here we deal with the money so that people can know that the money that you get from us, you must be accountable for. Same province, co-chair, an amount of 21 million was spent on the same site during the first quarter, even though there was no planned target for the quarter. Why then did the department incur such cost and on what? The last one from the chair, on title deeds. The department has an annual target of 5,000, including the target of 620 in the first quarter, and only achieving 71 in total. 72 at the core. What steps and measures is the department undertaking to ensure that it will achieve its set target by March 2023? And I think comments put us emphasizing the issue of project management. Indeed, we have to capacitate each other so that we are project orientated. Can't be correct that we just work as we wake up with Monday Friday. There must be some pace set that we know at this particular time we are achieving. And at some stage when we deal with the money, there must be an approach of some sort. To give an example of one, gate opening and gate closing. You must know that if you are given 10 million, before you go to the next 10 million, you must be able to close books, audited, done everything, satisfied, and mention the deliverable. Then you are given the other. This is how you can be able to account for everything. Also measure what is on the ground. But if we are going to have a session where you come and report, we did not achieve the money is gone, and it's tantamount to corruption. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sky, and okay, Honorable Powell, then Honorable Sky. I've not had Powell before, you can
Honorable Sky. Thank you, Chair. Welcome, colleagues. Thank you for having me to be here. I think that I covered on many questions already, and it's
awaits everyone's turn to speak there. So I just wanted to start off by addressing the National Department. The research paper that we've been given speaks about the unblocking plan, including a structure in the form of a human settlement war room, which would aim to, among other responsibilities, coordinate, monitor, and fast-track the implementation of diverse projects across provinces, provide detailed analysis, etc., etc. And then it says that the war room would identify strategic partners that could assist to unblock challenges and create an enabling environment for cooperative governance. Now, this is a phenomenon that we see across government. And whilst I absolutely applaud Honourable Minister Kobayi's initiative to get this unblocking project off the ground, what I would like to understand is if a new war room needs to be established with new staff members that will be paid millions of rands in salaries and external costs, what are the senior executives of the National Department currently doing that has required essentially a parallel management structure to be set up by the minister to manage this? Essentially, the question is, how did we get into this position, and what remedial, if management and existing human settlements department employees have not been able to do their job properly in terms of managing projects, and we now need to create a parallel structure, as I say, a phenomenon we see across government, what remedial action, Deputy Minister, is going to be taken against non-performing current incumbent executives? And then again to, I think, maybe Collie and through you, Chair, from a committee perspective, this is now the final round of this last three provinces. And something that I think all of us as members have noted is the disparities in terms of the quality of the presentations and the information provided. So while some provinces have come and provided quarterly progress for example, the first quarter of the current financial year, other provinces have come and provided retrospective views for previous financial years. Some provinces, for example, the Western Cape presentation, has got more of a drill down into the specifics of each of the blocked projects. And I think that it's very useful for us as MPs to have a standardized format in terms of the information that comes before us, as opposed to, for example, one of the provinces yesterday provided a quarter one update on the current financial year. Now, all of us know that we can't necessarily make any judgment calls or recommendations on the basis of a first quarter report. We need to wait for a finalized report. So these are just some of the things through you, Chairperson, and Kaliswa and our content advisor, when the mandate is given to the provinces to come and present to us, please can they be given very specific information that is helpful and useful to us. Then in terms of the Northwest, I'll be quick because colleagues have covered a lot. The Northwest Human Settlements Department committed to completing 247 housing developments after it finalises an audit of block projects across the province. The large number of incomplete structures and projects include non-performance by contractors, cost and price increases, while the housing quantum didn't increase. Now, I have been covered by Honourable Shirley, and it's a question that we've been asking to all provinces, but what action can the Northwest please tell us what specific action has been taken against non-performing contractors and how many contractors have been blacklisted. Then could the department please provide more information around the challenges experienced in the Northwest relating to tranche payments made to municipalities and what is the provincial department doing to address this? Then because the presentation didn't contain enough information to actually have a full picture in terms of how the Northwest Province is doing, and we don't yet have the finalised annual report, I went to go and have a look at the fourth quarter report that came before this committee a few months ago, and I noted that at the end of the previous financial year on BNG housing delivery, the target was 5,225 houses, but only 2,734 houses were delivered. and at the time that the presentation was given, 1,800 of these had been verified. That amounted ultimately to 52% performance on BNG housing delivery at the end of the fourth quarter against the targets, which is the worst in the country. This obviously isn't contained in the presentation today, but could the Northwest give us some information if current targets in terms of the annual performance plan aren't being met, and we're also trying to address retrospectively the block projects, what does that mean in terms of the revision of all of the performance plans for this province? Because we're not meeting current targets and we're also trying to address previous anomalies. So the backlog is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Can we please have some information on that? Then on service sites delivered in the previous financial year from the HSDG budget, no target was provided on the annual business plan. So there was a performance that was recorded, but there was no target. So there was no percentage achievement. Was the business plan submitted late? Why is there no target still on the fourth quarter report? And then again, the Northwest has got the second lowest spending on HSDG nationally at 81%. And what was being done in the Northwest to address block projects before the initiation of this ministerial unblocking project? If you're the Northern Cape, just a few questions. I noticed on the fourth quarter performance that you guys actually have done pretty well in terms of delivery against targets. And my colleague at the back has covered me on the question around the 72 million rand expenditure against a target of 107 million rand for quarter one against a 0% achievement. Now, I would presume that that's expenditure on bulks and infrastructure, so it wouldn't necessarily yield any material homes or houses or sites, and that's on project planning. So no judgment, but if we could have some clarity on that, please. Then what is the total budget for the year of the Tatalties program? To the officials who put the Northern Cape presentation together, it's very difficult for us as MPs to really take a deep dive and do a full analysis of what's going on in the province, because this presentation speaks to the current financial year, quarter one, and as I say, it's very difficult to make judgment calls against quarter one performance. It would have been a lot more useful if we could have had some retrospective information or some blocked project-specific information. So if we could just have the total budget for the year for the Title Deeds program, because I note that the budget is just for quarter one. And then it's a problem that I think most provinces are confronting, and it's a you know, intergovernmental issue that requires an intervention by COGTA as well as DHS, and then obviously the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, who are responsible for Title Deeds. But the Northern Cape noted that on Title Deeds there's a long turnaround time in getting registration documents signed by the municipalities. This is replicated across provinces. What interventions are being undertaken at a political, from the MEC's office, to capacitate municipalities with township establishment, rezoning, etc.? And is there anything in terms of the IGR agenda, perhaps DM, Honourable Tshwete, if you have any information or you're able to give an undertaking to the committee that this will be something tabled on the IGR, is this nationwide issue of the lack of capacity in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the lack of capacity in municipalities, and how it's actually hampering the performance of the Department of Human Settlements and the award of Title Deeds? It's not necessarily something that this department can solve. So the question there is, are there any IGR interventions being undertaken? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Square.
Chair, thank you very much. Good morning to the GM and the national officials, the officials from different provinces. Chair, I'm a little bit handicapped. I don't want to lie. I imagine a minister and a deputy minister going to a province to make the province which has got a legislative right to implement projects and perform. Now the minister goes to provinces and reinforce them to make them to do their work. So as you listen to the presentations that have been made here by the two provinces, there's nothing new. There's what they've been given to do. There's what they've been expected to do with all the structures, with all the budgets that have been given. Now what does that mean? That we are here to assess the performance of provinces within their program, because we are here to evaluate their performance. And clear in the presentation, the provinces necessitated that process to happen. They're complaining, raising this and that and challenges. And for some consecutive financial years. And my worry is that this has got nothing to do with us as a CBA. It has got to do with the people. Addressing the inequalities, addressing the poverty alleviation, and all those issues. And the province as it is, they seem to be thinking that it has got to do with them. They perform when they want, they don't perform when they don't want. Now I am worried with this, the detailed presentation says a lot about how are we going to address the conditions of the people where we are in all some of the issues that have been presented. Coming to some specifics in terms of the issues that made me to want. The issue of asbestos, let's start from there. From the initial policy provisions of this government, 1994, asbestos was condemned technically because of its health hazards. I ask myself, as I sit here, why is this happening, the removal of the asbestos? Why asbestos was used? Why asbestos was used? Because it was analyzed as a health hazard for our people in terms of the chest areas and the stomach, many other areas that were raised. Now, the issue now, the cost implications that we are to endure in this whole process. Duplication is putting money again and put asbestos, remove it by money, try to put another structure again. Getting to the issue of the Northern Cape is requesting the minister to exempt them from a clear flow of a service delivery and implementation within this financial year for packaging. They say it's not packaged well. Please bear with us. These are the issues that are worrying. I said people are waiting for us, and we are still having issues of not ready. With all the institutions and structures that have been established in provinces and municipalities, the march eradication, how I wish that the march eradication and the issues of township establishment and land release, how I wish that this process, the M and the chair, we can get from these provinces a report of a strategy to address the township establishment. in that area, because many of the issues that have been raised here are subjected to the process, which seemingly is not considered upfront when title deeds are challenged themselves, the match are challenged themselves, and the zoning are challenged themselves. The county establishment is the main. What makes it not to be done? Why do you plan a project without starting from there? That's the main start. That's what makes us to be in a block as it is now as a country. Can we get a strategy from these provinces, chairperson, that says this is our strategy to deal with the township establishment? Because we are starting now with the title deeds. Now, is what we're going to do now again going to do the same mistake? Can this be a priority so that we start to learn and see why this was not done by these both provinces? Block project. I speak for both provinces, Chair. The blocked project. Surely there are contractors that said they had the capacity to build houses. And in the process, they left projects without being finished. Some have not even started. They made the first layer and they cut. Now, can we get clarity if what was value for money for those contractors, if the provinces have managed to identify those contractors and they have blacklisted them or recover the money back to the department? The last one, Chair, is the... Oh, no, that was the last. My summary is that I'm a little bit worried thinking about the people of Northwest and the Northern Cape. They have a department that has got huge expectations, and the department has got skillful people that must address issues. But listening on the presentation consecutively in the financial year, things are not happening as they expect, and those people, they've got no other hope except their government. What does this mean? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. I think we've all received the, and I'm sure the departments are ready to respond. What I'll do, I'll give it to provinces, then afterwards I'll give it to the political leadership, which is the DM, to make an input. Now I'll start with the province that started with the Northern Cape, for them to respond to their questions. Then afterwards move to the Northwest. Then the political principal of Northern Cape will come in after the Northwest administration. Then the political principal of the Northwest will come in after the Northwest administration. Then the TM will close. Then the DG, then the TM. Thank you, DG, then the TM. Then.
Thank you, honourable members. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will start from the bottom up. Chair, all exemption for asbestos, like we said, we have a study done in 2015. We just need to verify and repackage the intervention. Remember the removal of asbestos. Groups specialized. So we need to properly package our projects to ensure that we do that. Chairperson, there's one questions occurring quite a lot in terms of our performance. Jay, if you look at services, how we report services in the province, we report it as a complete service, water and sanitation. So, Chair, because we wanted to keep the presentation very high level, we could have included and said, so many pipes, so many diameters have been laid. But we thought, because in our APP, we report a whole service. So we can reassure members that there is expenditure and there's work in progress in terms of services. Also in terms of topics such as we can record a detailed breakdown in terms of wall plates and content. We can do that. But Chair, there's no problem in terms of corruption or abuse of funding by the province. Chair, there was also another one on title deeds. What is our budget? It's over 12 million, Chair, for 5,000. That's the budget that we have on title deeds. There are also, Chair, specific questions in terms of expenditure, which I think I've responded to for IRDP, for rural housing, and for UISP. Chair, we are proud of the 71 achievement for quarter one. It's something we're working on, and we did indicate that there was a recent constitutional court ruling that impacted on the decision by National Treasury to advise departments not to procure. But Chair, like I said, we have a plan in place, and we have committed to say that coming up financial year, we will be achieving our target checks. Chair, in our presentation, we did indicate the extent of the asbestos roofs in our province. We also gave an indicator figure, Chair. In fact, we went further than looking at houses of asbestos. We looked at all structures in the province, but we do know that our focus is on top structures with asbestos. So we know, Chair, what is happening concerning asbestos. Yes, Chair, these are priorities which should have been normalized. You know, the minister did not have to come for an intervention. But we do call the Chair that we are putting effort and committing budget to ensure that we meet the standard chapters and we prioritize it. Chair, in terms of block project, we said we don't, there's a slide where we say on HSS, block projects are classified as, or projects are classified as blocked. But we believe those are some of the projects which must be closed off. They are not necessarily blocked. So that's the process that we are doing, Chair. We don't have, and we have not blacklisted any contractor to date in terms of that, because our reconciliation says that we don't have, and where we find that there are beneficiaries, they were not assisted. Because sometimes, Chair, there are issues of beneficial administration and proper project planning that left us in the situation, but our records tell us that we don't check with it. On my house, Chair, we said that we have two projects. We also said that in our revised, we've added one additional project, Chair, which is quite urgent. So there's about three projects in which we hope to do, but one approved business plan, we do only two subject to approval of our revised, Chair. And then, Chair, there was a comment on our fourth quarter performance. and then maybe we needed to go into it. But Chair, it is documented and recorded that we performed well in the last financial year, so much so that we were given an additional 60 million to do informal settlements. We have a high capacity project and a high capacity contractors. Our main challenge is budget, Chair, and I know our member said we must not make it an excuse, but if you look at, and we know that the census and status say that informs allocations. But if you look at Northwest, for example, they are budget on issue or informal settlements upgrading grant. It's more than the combined HMDG and ILUPG of the Northern Cape on one program. So we have projects, Chair, and we will show by our performance that we can deliver. In fact, we are planning on exceeding our targets on top structures. Why we have achieved and overachieved our targets on top structures, we still feel the need that we need to do more. But on services, Chair, if you go back to the last two financial years, you will see that we performed exceptionally well. Chair, I'm going to hand over to my MEC.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sir, before you come in, when you respond, don't take more than the 45 minutes that you used to present. So it becomes a new presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and I will be brief, and thanks for the opportunity. Chairperson and members, let me take this opportunity to thank the committee for affording us this opportunity to engage and clarify some of the challenges that we experience as a province. I think it will really strengthen us to perform better as a department to make sure that we change the situation to our people, to make sure that we respond in terms of housing development. You will agree with me, Chair, that as a department, we've taken a decision to change from Department of Housing to Human Settlements to speed up the process of service delivery and to change services to our people. And that's why the issue of servicing of sites, it's very important for us as a department. So that we at least give dignity to our communities and make sure that we speed up the process. But also, the chairperson, maybe on one or two issues. The one of title deeds, and I agree that we encounter serious challenges in terms of the issuing of title deeds. That's why we are fast-tracking the issue of appointment of conveyances. This process will be finalized in the next week, the appointment of conveyances. As part of our strategy, we also agree that we should allocate conveyances to the different regions. We have five regions in the province, so that we have at least a process of fast-tracking it, the issuing of title deeds. We further identified two regions to fast-track the process. That's why we've identified Namakwa and Francis Park. These two regions will at least give us close to 5,000 title deeds if we start with them, so that we will be in a position to reach our target. So the picture will drastically change in terms of title deeds. Then on the issue of the contractors, we managed to see some of the contracts to performing contractors, because a number of our contractors are not performing. And it's a serious concern. That's why, as a department, we are meeting fortnightly with contractors to gauge the performance of our contractors so that we can intervene in time, so that we don't want where we sit in a situation where we wait up until the contract or the project is ready to collapse. 2000, then we intervened. So we have a strategy to deal with the issue of contractors. So we've seized a number of projects where contractors couldn't make it. But also, Honorable Chairperson, we are sitting with the challenge of land. And you are correct, we have land in the province, vast areas of pockets of land. But the reality is, Honorable Chairperson, is this land is private owned, the land that we have. And I just checked an audit some weeks ago that we are still sitting with 72% of land in the hands of the previous advantage people in South Africa, which poses a serious challenge, which means that we have to buy this land from private owners. But also, Chairperson, in terms of the critical issues raised in terms of mud houses, we've identified there's two projects. The one we will hand over Mafokeng soon, the houses there, and then Williston, where it's in process, but we will make sure that we respond to it as soon as possible. And then also on the one of asbestos, you will see that we've done a study in terms of asbestos in 2015. It's a serious challenge, and I agree it's a young hazard, and we need to respond as soon as possible as a department going forward to make sure that at least we change the situation in terms of asbestos. But the reality of the matter is, Chairperson, and we don't want to come with excuses. It's clear that we are raising the issue of our budget on all the platforms. Deputy Minister is here. She came at some point with us to sit with us as a province and really helped us to change the picture. But the issue of our baseline poses here this challenge. And I think in terms of the performance of servicing of sites, we are the best performing province in terms of that. And I think that we can still do better if we have more money available. But with the support from our national department, I think we will be in a position to change the situation. And at least we managed to deal with a number of our challenges in our province. So, Chairperson, on that note, I really want to thank you for this opportunity, and I really want to thank the National Department for the support that they are giving. They are really trying to support our provinces to do better in terms of housing development. We want to make sure that our people are happy and we respond to the needs of our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Northern Cape, Northwest.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning once more. I will try to be as quick as possible. Maybe first to start with the issue relating to the fourth quarter or the annual performance for the previous year. I think we can share that and be able to show the trend of performance over a period of years, where maybe the members can be able to identify areas of improvement or not. But straight to the issues that have been raised, I'll only leave two for my colleague next to me. He has a better voice than mine, so I think he will speak better. With park infrastructure, Chair, there's an issue to say how do we, that the rationale to say we can't record some of the housing units complete because of the absence of park. I think what I remember was saying is exactly what we did. So I want to give a typical example in Dr. RSM in Naledi Municipality in Spena, which used to be an area where people were working at the farms. They were ordinarily being dumped there when they were fired from work. Municipality engaged with us to establish township. We did, and we said we'll bring internal services and housing, but we sat down and agreed with the district that that they're going to do bulk, and we agreed on that, and the process is parallel. So what they did, they delayed all the documents. I procured the project, they delayed. I'm far advanced than they are. And that now disturbs me completing my project. So the advice was given is actually what we are doing. But I think with the introduction of DDM, it's going to force us to collaborate in making sure that this thing happens as been planned. And I've seen that beginning to happen in that present district. The rationale on why the performance on the two grants are not the same, on the HSDG and IUSP, I think I touched that briefly. The units for the first quarter, we were supposed to get the numbers from projects that were rolled over to the new financial year, than those that we have appointed in the new financial year. But those who rolled over, Chair, that those who have abandoned sites, who are very slow on sites because of the price increase. So the quantum they are using is as old as 4 years old. And they said, we can no longer be able to do business. And hence we started the process as a department. We said, we have two choices. Like the honourable member was saying, whether this will end up being a wasteful expenditure, or you start a process of putting in place a relief so that you get the project complete. So if not, there will be block projects and there will be more to deal with at a later stage. And it will be cheaper if you are to provide the relief now and make sure the projects are being completed and communities are being handed out. And that is the process we have engaged with. We have notified the department through the office of the HOD, of the DG. We have been advised a week ago that we must do the same embassy through the embassy office to write to the ministers, notify them of the approach we are taking to make sure we get those completed. Because if not, there will be another special type of block project, and we'll continue to block projects in the province if we are not being able to be effective. The blacklisting part, Chair, I can confirm that we don't have any contractor who has led to the block project on our on-site doing anyway. We have not brought them back on site. Yes, we have not blacklisted, but we have terminated them. Even when the current ones that are performing, that we are on site, we have written them notice letters of warning to say if they don't come to speed, having granted them variations which, from the engineering point of view, they are due to them. If they are not doing the work, we have to terminate them. And I think the introduction of a weekly meeting with regions led by the chief director and the support in my office, which culminate on a monthly meeting with developers per district, is beginning to bring them together to be able to perform. So they know when we terminate them, it's not a witch hunt, there's no political issues, it's purely in terms of the contractual obligation that I've signed with them as the developers. Now, there was a question on the target for the mud houses. We do have a target in the business plan, and it was expected there. It's 520 chairs. The only target we don't have is on asbestos, it's on the regional I've explained where we are quantifying the numbers. But the other question was how, because of the asbestos, the issue of mud houses is not a new thing, how we have been dealing with before. I did explain earlier to say we've been dealing with them as part of rural housing program. And by then, there was no requirement to report on how many mud houses we have addressed separately from overall program as we're implementing it. Hence, there was a slide and a note we made that over years, this is the number of houses, which are about 12,500 that we have developed, and in that others are the mud houses. But moving forward, there is a requirement that now we report separately on the category of mud houses. So you will know in the Northwest that you find mud houses in the rural communities, not in townships. So we are predominantly rural, so we have been dealing with it in that way. Hence, we only said we didn't want to sum such a number and say to Parliament, since that project is through, we have then dealt with 5,000 mud houses. And when the MPs do oversight and find an authority, we would have created a serious problem that is still in Parliament. As we said, we can quantify. So we have already begun a process of developing a capacity to do some assessment for us on the ground, and we can be able to quantify and then record that over that particular period. But moving forward, we have set aside for this financial year 520 that we'll be dealing with for us to be able to do this. The issue that relates to I've dealt with the response to the four challenges. When there was a question to say what mainly, apart not from provinces only, but also from national, on the challenges of eradicating the mud houses, I think the pronouncement and the priority by the minister is going to help. The municipalities, as we deal with the business plan, are the ones who make input where we should invest money. And over the years, our experience as a province is that they would prefer us to deal with the mud houses when they've been classified as if there is a disaster. And that happened late last year, when the national came to us and they asked to say, but this house is damaged by rain, they are mud houses. Why do you want to deal with them as disasters? We have to change that and say, no, let's deal with them as a problem of mud houses. But we also rely on the municipalities in terms of, you know, we can't impose a particular investment in a municipality, like one member was saying, that investment will require infrastructure capacity of that municipality to do that happen. And when we impose it, you are on your own, because of this not one area would have wanted us to deal with that. The issue relating to the target bid for pre-1994, there is a target in the plan that I talked about, secure of tenure. For the province, it's 1,089. And we have provided the reasons why we have not moved with an established bid to deal with that, and that's where the ministry has intervened. Most of these are the properties that are being managed by our housing corporation. And the challenge with that is between the housing corporation and the municipalities where these people are occupying these houses and these portions of land, and them owing municipalities for rates and taxes, and creating a problem to move with speed to deal with the transfer of the title deeds. So hence the two provinces at the level of the premiers, where they've convened a committee that the premiers and the DGs meet at the level of the minister, between the minister, the two MEs, the two provinces, and the municipalities are engaging to find solution, and we are hopeful that we'll be able to deal with it. And mostly affect, more especially the cross boundary, like you are 20 people in Harangua, Winterfell, Magubani, Temba, and many other areas. So we think with approach and intervention by the minister, it will be able to help us share to deal with that. I want to then ask Mr. Mashabani to talk to the planning part. I think that's a critical question that was raised, to say if in the last financial year we did deliver on service side, but they were not in the business plan for the HSDC, but they spent the money, then what happened? What was the planning issue? And how did the amendment process go through? He will be dealing with that panel after we hand over to the MEC. Mr. Mashabani.
Before we come, remember we have an agreement that the response does not belong at the presentation.
Yes, just one point.
Okay. No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, colleagues. In actual fact, what has happened is that for those parts that might not have been reflected on the HSDG, most of the parts, especially in our business plans, we covered the part of the service sites on the ISUPG grant. So they were reflecting mostly on that because we were addressing mostly the informal settlement. So that part we have managed to reconcile in terms of the business plan at the end of the financial year. I'm sure the Honourable Member has realized that we have achieved, it might have reflected that we have achieved more on what we have not planned for or budgeted for in the HSDG. It was the money that was transferred to Matosana Local Municipality addressing catalytic project. So we did not reconcile the money. It was 250 million, which was addressing service sites and bulk infrastructure project. So we just reported on the expenditure part, but not on the non-financial part. So on the consolidation of that, then it reflected as if we achieved something that was not budgeted for.
The budget to a project. Thank you. Chair, we'll hand over to the Honourable
MEC. Okay, no, thank you very much. I think to a large extent, Honourable Chair, the acting HUG and the director have responded to all the issues. What I would just emphasize on is that much as we agree that on the issue of the pre-1994 title deeds, we still have a lot to do. We really must appreciate the work that is done by our housing corporation, because each and every quarter, if not each and every month, there are title deeds that we issue. And what we have agreed upon as an approach with the acting HOD was that we don't give these title deeds to the municipalities. We issue them directly as the department, because what we have realized was that municipalities are now losing them against our communities who are owing services to the municipality, and therefore we hold these title deeds, and then our people would then be suffering having their title deeds on the basis of not being able to pay services. And that's why through the Northwest Housing Corporation we've got a program that says the department itself will directly take those title deeds to our people. And, last week we were in Matiku issuing out about 154 of the title deeds. The minister, during the visit of the president in our province, issued about more than 1,000 title deeds in Tsuseng and so forth. So that program is running at a speed that we have developed it as the department, and we are hoping that in no time we'll then be able to have covered as soon as the conveyancers have done their work, we issue those title deeds. So thanks very much to your good self, Honorable Chair, the Honorable Deputy Minister, and the committee for giving us this opportunity to report on our performance. Thank you very much.
DG, DM.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable MEC. We answer few questions, then with your permission, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Cheney, then we provide the details on the program. The first point that I want to advance, Honorable Chairperson, is the planning of the removal of asbestos, the mud houses, and the unblocking of block projects. The point that I'm making, Chairperson, is that we are now finding each other as a sector towards the integrated human settlements that are planned, and you see all these priorities that have been planned by the provinces. Secondly, is the issue of the title deeds. The human settlements may led to the resolution that the title deeds should be issued, the process should start immediately when the service site is being issued and is not linked to the beneficiary. So this question also speaks to the fast-tracking of the issuing of the title deeds. You have seen, Honorable Chairperson, that Northwest Province also spoke to this issue. So this should be enable us to fast-track the issuing of the title deeds, all of them, the categories that started from the 1994. The next point, Chairperson, also around the title deed is the issue of the title deed that refers to the Northwest Housing Corporation property. This is the matter that is affecting the residents from Mabopane, Winterfell, and Harankua. We call them Mawika. These are the beneficiaries that have been trying to get the title deed for more than 20 years. They've been moving from one province to the other. Let me indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that this has now become a priority, the ministerial priority project. So now they are meeting us at the department and also with the minister in order to sort this issue of their outstanding title. The non-performing municipalities, let me indicate that this matter has been elevated also to the different clusters. As part of the IGR in terms of how best all the departments can assist the non-performing municipalities. Last week there was a meeting that was also convened by the COPTA in order also to address this matter. And it also includes how municipalities also can be assisted in terms of making sure that they collect their revenue and their economic conditions does improve. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that also in line with what this intervention in terms of the IGR, it is also the requirement of the national department in this particular, in terms of the constitution, to assist the municipalities in fulfilling their responsibilities. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Then, with your permission, Mr. Chin can just go into detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, MECs, colleagues. Chair, on the point that was raised by the Honorable Tafeni with regards to households that do not qualify One of the points that we have raised, and it's part of some of the province's intervention, is that in relation to service sites, where a province or a municipality provides a service site, there is the ability for persons who don't qualify to then purchase that site at the value in which that was developed. That's always been a process. So that's of households that don't qualify for any of the subsidy instruments. For households that are above the threshold of 3,500, there is the finance-linked subsidy program, together with the Helping Buyer, or the, as now we call it, the Helping Buyer Home subsidy. That allows households either to access a property in conjunction with mortgage finance, and it does not necessarily mean that it has to be within a specific project, but it also could be in the open market. There's an entire process that we've undertaken and implemented together with the NHPRC as well as the provinces. On the issue around the blacklisting of contractors, Honourable Chair, I think the issue is that when we raise the issue on the question of blacklisting of contractors, I think there's a number of issues that a province or municipality has to take into consideration. And this, because there are a number of legal steps that you've got to be able to take with specific reference to the contractor. But the expectation is that where a province has undertaken that and completed that process, there's a process that then National Treasury has implemented, and we've had our first blacklisting of a contractor in respect of the Limpopo project that we all know about. So where that contractor, together with the director concerned, has been blacklisted, and that contractor then will not be able to do business with any state entity or organ for the next 10 years. Chair, the acting DG has signed and communicated what we call the restriction authority committee, which then provides a guideline for provinces and municipalities on what to do and how to follow that process, so that we don't fall foul of any of the precedents. Chair, I think the point around the question of the war room, Chad, I think we must be clear, it's not a parallel structure. And when we speak about blockages, we must be clear that there's a number of areas which result in a blockage. And we've raised this. So you will have a situation where there are technical and there are regulatory and there are compliance blockages. What am I talking about? Geotech, environmental, a whole range of those. For example, heritage. That has the result of putting a hold on certain on the ability of a project to move. The second part is where, for example, a project, either the land or the project, is illegally occupied. There's also the issue around the question of where there are community protests, there are community dissatisfaction that results in it. Not all of it is technical, not all of it is something that can be ascribed to either an official or an event that we can apportion blame to either the national, provincial, or municipal. So in each circumstance, as I think the provinces have outlined, they are undertaking detailed an understanding of each block project. So as we indicated last week, for example, the war room that minister set up, there's a specific person with the requisite technical skills, who's an engineer, with requisite qualifications, who's assisting specific provinces to do that analysis. So in the case of Limpopo, they've discovered a substantial amount of the projects there, there's duplication. Or they've removed the duplication, something like 100 projects. I think it's important to note that one of the things that we need to agree and understand is that there's been a substantial loss of capacity, either technical or otherwise. And what we are trying to do as the National Department, and this is why the Minister set up this, is that we've got to be able to provide, in terms of our responsibility as a National Department, we've got to be able to provide that support. And it's not a parallel structure. I think at an appropriate time we can in conjunction with the Office of the Minister supply that reply, which indicates how within the function of the department, within the function of the IGR process, that war room, five people at the moment, technically, chaired by the ex-DG for COPTA, national. Another example, Chair, that we've had for the last 20 years, we've had a blockage, for example, in Kutsong, Marathon, because of a whole range of disasters as well as emergency blockages. I can tell you from where I sit, the work that we've had to do with the expertise of the respective person appointed in the war room has allowed us to do that. Unfortunately, the person concerned, Dr. Tao, is now being appointed by the UN and the Botswana government, so he had to exit the... So that's the capability of the people that ministers appointed. So I think we must, as I think DM together with acting DG will indicate that, but I think we must be very clear about what the intention is. Thanks.
Let me start by greeting you, Chair, and all of the members, the MCs from the North and Cape and Western. Chair, let me start by saying Northern Cape and Western Cape are provinces that are always neutralizing the funding. When we took the decision that we are not going to take money back to Shosha, I think Lucy, the acting CFO, in the last two visits of the provinces, it was explained that we decided that we don't take money back to the treasury. Instead, we look at those provinces that are not utilizing the money and we take it to those provinces that are in need of the money. I think Northern Cape and Western Cape benefited to this process. And I know that the second one which was raised is the issue of impact of asbestos. And if you think of it, Honorable Nancy, that the old Tanzania, the whole of Tanzania is asbestos. So it means it's going to take time, the issue of asbestos, because majority of townships in 1994 are all asbestos. So it's something that is going to take quite some time, but we need to fast track it, because at the end of the day, the decision was taken that asbestos must go. Therefore, I want to commend the member of government for inviting provinces, because they will see now, because most of the time questions are asked to the national. Now that they're here, they see that the hot seat is not us, and it's shared amongst us and them. So they are going to make sure that they fast track. And again, the issue of that is the same as asbestos. When we gave money to provinces to fast track the issuing of deputies, but that money was not used by most of the provinces. And I know that members of parliament were always asking us questions around the slow pace of issue of diabetes. But I see now the DDM is actually affecting us. We're able to go and also be part of this 3 years of government. Issue of down and establishment, which we were told then that if it delays the process, we will do it together with the local government. We are going to do it together. I think the War Room and Honorable Power have a specific instrumental key performance indicators. They are not clashing with the officials because they were meant for these War Rooms for disasters so that we get information immediately. Because most of the time you find that provinces delay the applications to national so that they are able to get measures to grant. So this War Room is actually assisting us to make sure that we facilitate that kind of processes of the disaster, combining whatever is needed to be paid. So they're a specific key performance indicator. They don't duplicate what is done by senior officials. Otherwise, we will make sure that they do what they're here for. Besides the contractors cannot do their job, we found that when we were going province to province, even those that have completed their jobs, it's quality of the houses that they're building, cheap material. I have two projects that we identified. I think I mentioned that to one of the powers, that we're still dealing with provinces that are not monitored. Now that we have NHBRC, and we always reach to them to say, the inspectors, what is the duty of the inspectors? NHBRC should make sure that those houses that we enroll and also give them happy letters, they are inspected and checked that whether quality is fine. But the minister said with the contractors that do not perform, we started by saying contractors must be known by the community that are serving. They must go and introduce the contractor to the community. Because in that way, even contractors, community will monitor themselves. Because it shouldn't be us, it should be all of us that are actually monitoring the performance of the contractors. And Minister made it clear that those that are found must be blacklisted. And I'm glad that it's raised by majority of provinces that they are working on making sure that they are going to, but there are legal processes to be followed before, because they will take this record for that we are looking at it. And also I have a feeling that the DGM is actually assisting us, the members, to make sure that we nationals go down to the local government and also monitor what they are doing in terms of the funding that are given by us, in terms of houses that are built by local government. It's something that we are going to do. And I think the FNDG has covered some of the questions that were asked and digital chain. I think those are the questions that were asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. I think we need to be clear. The time has arrived that we must start enforcing the law for the benefit of our people. You know, it can't be that in the Northern Cape that they want to build houses for people, but majority of the land is privately owned and is not used for anything. Now, I think as a department, we need to move, because we have a responsibility to make sure that our people get the service that they need. Now, even if it means the next time that we convene here, MEC or Northern Cape, I want to hear that you are taken to court because you are making sure that they are using that land there for the benefit of our people. Because if we don't stop acting, if we don't act to make sure that our people benefit, we'll have a situation whereby someone will be sitting there in Europe owning land here in South Africa where he doesn't know what we had, and the people in South Africa are suffering. Now we need to start moving on that process. And it is very important that also on the consequence management, because also there is no way that you can implement or spend if you can't plan. because everything starts playing. Now, those who are unable to spend, it means they can't plan, because you get to a point where you are given money, you don't know what to do with it because you have not planned for it. Now, I think those are issues that we'll sit on. Departments must start spending on time. By the time the budget arrives, they are able to know where to allocate that budget. And also, we're not going to operate like we're a separate state or government. Local, provincial, and national government must be able to coexist to make sure that services get to our people. That's our responsibility to make sure that all these red tapes that are there, that are assisting us to deliver, are resolved. I believe that the Western Cape has arrived now. Normally what we do in the Western Cape is just to inform you. We, as a committee, we work as a team. Now, if we say the committee starts at 9, even if you know you present at 9:30, you arrive at 9 to listen to our presentations of other provinces, because the expectation is that when you present, they'll be able to listen to you. And we share notes on how best we can work together to resolve all the social challenges of our people. But is the Western Cape yet?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, colleagues. I apologize if we were not here earlier. Our invitation did indicate that we needed to be here at 10:30. That was our specific time. So that we didn't receive any notice that the session would start earlier than that. But we are here. We've got a team, our chief director implementation, our director grant management, director strategic support, our active CMO is here, and our land and asset management team are here as well. Thank you, sir.
Okay, then can we receive the presentation? Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to ask our director grant management to take us through the presentation, and then the rest of the team will support as the questions come through. Thank you.
You must find it. Also, we've got to reprioritize our funding for this, and we will make sure that as MTF we prioritize funding for this replacement of the business groups. And just in the terms of the eradication of mud houses, we assessed 18 houses in the Otuan area. They're not strictly speaking mud houses. Some of the foundations are failing. They unfired clay bricks. And we intended to replace all of them. We had to assess the beneficiaries who qualified for 40 square meter BNG houses. At the end of the day, a lot of these houses were a lot larger than 40 square meters. And some of the beneficiaries chose rather to have their houses repaired and to keep the larger houses. We couldn't put an additional 40 square meter house on the block. So it was a choice. Either you get a new one or you retain your house and we repair where necessary. So we've dealt with most of those. We are looking at whether there are any further mud houses in the province. But because we don't have traditional structures in our towns, there aren't many mud houses that we have identified. And just in terms of stall projects or block projects, I'm going to run through a series here of projects that we've experienced in steam blockages, and I'll go through quite quickly. It's quite a long presentation. Just in terms of Joslow informal settlement, I think we're all aware of this project, which was initiated in 2005, Providence Gateway, and it started with the predecessor of the HDA, Tanisha Holmes, in a partnership with the National Department of Health and Human Settlement and the City of Cape Town. There was a bit of delay when Tanisha Holmes was wound up in 2009. We've continued as a province with the HDA, but we've had almost continuous delays because people have refused to move. So there have been some eviction proceedings, and at this point in time, we are unable to move anyone else off the site. The original consortium that was doing the development, Bambasan is Bambri, wound up now. We're maintaining and sorting out the TRAs that are there. We can't move further with the project now. So that is the project. If you see the red line at the bottom from left to right across the picture, a lot of it has been developed, but as you go up and into, you'll still see areas that haven't been developed where people have refused to move. Then just in the airport precinct, this is a series of projects where we're upgrading informal settlements. This is just a high-level layout, but we started on a portion of this. So we've identified all the areas. We've done plans of subdivision for the city of Cape Town. We've got we've got all approvals and rezoning on most of those areas. We're doing some remediation reports. And we will be able to finalize all the land use planning approvals very soon. The problem with the areas that we've started to develop is relocating the households on the site. So we definitely need areas that we can clear, and to do that we need to relocate families. The space is very limited, and we were relying to a certain extent on two projects I'll talk about now, of our Mutton Timber project, to use as a decanting area. But even there we have issues with properties being invaded. So there are ongoing mediation efforts with the occupants and consultation to try and make sure things are managed smoothly. So these are just the layouts of the areas that we're developing, and some of the layout plans that we put for the new developments to de-densify. We started with 729 sites on which we were going to do 455 BNG units and 274 were high density areas. We've managed to service the first 308 sites. We've relocated people, but now we've reached difficulty in relocating further households. So we're only going to get to 341 sites at this point in time. We've had several mediation efforts, but the contractor has now indicated that they're not willing to continue, so we've had to de-scope the works from the contractor. We've had a lot of violence on the project. There have been shooting incidents, threats to the contractors and subcontractors, and threats of extortion. And effectively now we're sitting with a situation where the contractor is asking to walk away with what they've done. So the contractor and the department's reached an agreement to terminate the works at the reduced scope now. And obviously where we could, we've the all the incidents of intimidation we've reported and have opened cases, but it's still very difficult for contractors and subcontractors to work on site. So the condition of our termination of the agreement is that the contractor will complete the 341 that they're busy with now. We're providing substantial security services at the moment. The construction of the outstanding works, we are starting again in September, and we will be completed with those 341 sites by February 2023, and then we're going out to procurement for a new contractor to try and complete the rest and build the top structures on the land. Then in terms of our new Wellwood project, this was initiated in 2017-18. Actually, the planning went back further than that. And ultimately, it's going to be 3,800 sites and service urban units. We've awarded the bulk civil engineering, electrical bulks, and phase one of the internal services. Unfortunately, on this site, there are small-scale farmers and other occupants, and we've been in ongoing efforts to mediate. We've tried to look at the options of eviction as well, and it's progressing very slowly. We've cleared some areas, so we only have limited access to the site. We've created a temporary relocation area on a portion of the site, and that was to help us to accommodate people that were willing to move off the areas for construction. Then just in terms of the timber project, we've gone ahead with all the planning, all the layouts, approvals for the city are now in place, but we have a similar situation there with informal farmers on site and our farmers. And we have the HDA assisting us to move people in phases to allow us to construct there. Many of the occupants of the site will benefit from the project. So we have all our layout plans for both city of Cape Town there. So this is the Atemba project, and this is the approved plan. You can even see this stamp there. The trick now is to relocate people in phases and move on to the site. Then Lundberg-Robertson, this is a project that was blocked some time ago. We developed some large sites there to build FLISP units on. We tried to market and build the 150 FLISP units, and that was an ongoing challenge. We wanted to use the land, that infrastructure effectively. We didn't want to invade it. We redesigned 474 sites in BNG units, and we've got a contract on site, and that is now being completed. So those houses are very close to completion now in Robertson. Same time, Mundy, upgrade there. That's an ongoing part of a much bigger project. The 178 that we're working with now, it's very densely populated. The relocations are due to be completed for this portion of the project by the end of September, and the contract is already on site establishing to start with the servicing of those sites. You can see that's the high-level view of Kayamandi, the Zone O, and the portion that we're going to work on in the Phase 3, the 178 sites where we're going to begin the project. Then on the Thunberg Series, a large project that was planned some time ago, 2,163 sites. The main issue here is around bulk services, electrical and water pumps that the city, that the town of Ceres can't provide at this point in time. But we have serviced 605 sites, over 1,020 sites, and we built 229 houses at this point in time. The project deals with the housing backlog in the entire Ceres area, so it's drawing people from all areas. Substantial project, and we will accommodate all families on the way, most of the families on the waiting list, and we're decanting some areas into informal settlements as well to help develop in particularly in the Lillie area as well. But as I've mentioned, the lack of bulk infrastructure, electricity is a severe complaint. The project is delayed, so even people that are in the informal areas have access to electricity, but if we build houses here, we can't provide electricity at this point in time. The other layout of the Frederbest project, to the left of the diagram here is the town of Ceres, and to the right is the area of Nduli. So a lot of the Nduli occupants, you'll see there's some very dense informal settlements there, will be relocated, and that will help with identification there to help us start with our Nduli project. So you can see from the layout, there's a lot of sites sitting there that are developed, and you can see even see the houses in that that we have developed. We're going to use a lot of it now to decamp people from the Duli as well. Then the result of the Fuller Park settlement upgrade on in the Bradarstorp area, we've had ongoing challenges developing this particular area. It's a settlement that's been there for some time. Unfortunately, it's located right adjacent to a municipal dumping site, and because of that, the environmental bylaws don't allow us to develop there. Not considered healthy for human occupation. So what we've tried is a last attempt now to see if we can develop a portion of the site, see if the zone that can be developed within can be reviewed, and then we will have to relocate people who are in the area that can't be developed. So that final step in the process, the air quality study, is what we're doing at the moment. Then Timberlake, this is obviously a much larger area, but we initiated this as far back as 2012. It's quite a substantial project, 4,350 opportunities. We're about halfway with that now in terms of development, but a lot of the areas that initially marketed for this project are problematic in that they've been invaded now, or they are in private ownership and we can't resolve that matter. So for now, we've developed almost 2,000 sites, and where people have qualified, we've built up structures on those sites for people. But developing further areas now has become very difficult. The areas are very dense, and we have no further relocation areas to clear portions of the site. There have also been issues there in terms of intimidation of contractors. It's a very difficult area in which to work. So we're working with the municipality consistently over the last few years. We've been providing funding for bulk services to at least unlock development in the area. And then obviously we're providing, all the municipalities are providing basic services in the areas that are still informal. So there's an aerial view of Timberlake to some of the areas that we've developed. You'll see in blue at the back there. It's a substantial project, and it's been ongoing for some time, but due to the need to relocate families, it's quite challenging. So there's some of the areas that we have developed, and you can even see that some of the people on those sites have received top structures as well. Then the Mosbay Nust informal settlement upgrades. So this is made up of 23 settlements in the Mosbay area. Ultimately, it'll be nearly 3,500 sites. We'll need substantial bulk infrastructure to do the whole project. We've done the first phase of 680 sites, or we've started with it, but we've had challenges, again, moving families that need to be relocated. And then in the last week of August now, we had some serious problems there in terms of vandalism, damage to contractors' equipment, destruction of the CRAs that we've put up. And for now, the contractor can't move. We're trying to resolve that now. But there's been substantial damage to property. Some of it obviously can be covered by insurance. The rest we're going to have to see how we can manage that going forward. We do have other pockets of land we can work on, and we may have to concentrate our efforts on other areas for now. We're obviously working with the municipality. I think there's a meeting scheduled for today with the municipality to try and resolve the issues there, but it's still quite a volatile situation. Then in Clan William, we've got the Khayelitsha informal settlement upgrade. A very difficult area, very expensive area to develop in. It's a very rocky area, but there are at least 900 families. It's a growing informal settlement adjacent to Clan William. We haven't been able to unlock any development there for some time. There are issues around bulk infrastructure. What we're doing now is going in providing basic shared services. And we've also awarded the contract for some access roads, which will start in the new financial year. So we're trying to make inroads there to try and provide some basic services. The challenge there is we're finding it very expensive because of the ground conditions, the very rocky conditions, and getting access and bulk services in. but obviously, yeah, it's part of a much larger project of 900, but we're getting some of the basic services in now already. Then the Dronson Flatland project, one of our critical projects. We made good progress initially. We serviced 958 of the site, and 309, one phase of the four, is completed. We had serious problems with one of the contractors, and finally that contract had to be terminated last year. We formally terminated, and we've now unblocked that by awarding the remaining houses to be completed to another contractor, as well as some of the further phases of that. Further parts of the site are still partially blocked because we have some small-scale farming activity on the site, and the small-scale farmers aren't willing to move further out of the area. So there's the aerial view of Flakkeland at the moment. So you can see the areas we've developed, and closer to the main road to Wellington there, you'll see that there's some areas where there's informal activity and informal farming. Then just an overview of the informal settlements. My colleague from planning, I'm sure he won't mind if I do this part on his behalf. So just an overview of our informal settlements. 527 settlements in the city of Cape Town Metro, and then outside of the Metro, 431. So a total of 958 settlements. This gives you an idea. The main concentration is obviously in the Metro, 779 of the settlements. West Coast 47, Winelands 110, Central Guru only 5 informal settlements, although there are backyard structures there. 214 in the Garden Route and 66 in the Overberg area. We have looked at the different challenges, almost done a risk review of how we manage our project, and look at all the challenges we have. So obviously finding alternative suitable land, we often need to relocate people, is an issue. Also funding the non-human settlements related work in terms of bulk services is challenging. Most municipalities have bulk problems. Then also municipal capacity is not always there. To upgrade informal settlements, so we've given a lot of support from the province to assist with municipalities in doing this. And then the lengthy statutory approval processes. For projects, we need to go through all the normal planning requirements, and the environmental authorizations, it's obviously time consuming. And then, of course, where the projects are located, and how we've rated our projects, I'll go through that in the next slide, is very important as well. And then all the stakeholder management issues are something that we haven't, we've now got a lot of NGOs involved to try and handle matters like this. It takes substantial time to work with communities and take everything needs to be consulted when you're working. So these are the main risks. Just normal settlement growth, but often when you, even if you clear an area, there's further land invasion. There is infrastructure vandalism, particularly around electrical installations. Procurement, the SEM processes are slow. The stability in municipalities, how we're working with municipalities, is always interesting. And we do have some instances of sabotage and protest action. And then obviously it'll keep coming up about infrastructure issues. The one at the bottom there, we all know is a very difficult issue, the issue of what, how to accommodate an undocumented non-national So basically we're looking at this point in trying to at least with what we call reblocking, getting road access in, getting basic services in, but more about normalizing the settlements. And the issue there is settlements we have, there's overcrowding, there's backyarders, population growth within those settlements and the normal household growth and inland migration continually means that the settlements are becoming denser and denser. So we need to look at how we can fund all the development we do to move from that. then this just highlights the minimum standards and how we try to provide at least minimum standards of shared services. So basically everything's talking about 25 households or 5 households. So we're trying to move to more than that. And also with our super blocking approach, we're trying to at least get access roads into some of the more dense settlements. The ultimate is to get one-on-one services, stage 3 UISP, but that is obviously only achievable if you can decant a lot of the control on fine settlements. Just to illustrate the average cost of the land and all that is required to do is get the site in place. Just an idea of how our business plan is broken down. So of the 484 million we get for the ISAP grant for the 22-23 year, 269 million of that is going to permanent services, 48 million goes to basic services, planning and professional fees is a further 76 million, social facilitation and remuneration 2.5 million, we've done a lot more in the previous year, and then 87 million into golf infrastructure. Similarly for next year, 319 million in permanent services, a lesser amount, 12 million for basic services, 97 in planning and professional fees for future planning, 28 million for land acquisition, and 49 million for bulk infrastructure. Title deeds is an area that we're focusing on. Our HMDs, taking a very strong lead on this. On the pre-94, we're managing to dispose of most of those cases. And in 1994 to 2014 cases, our total is 4,500 for the year. We've already done 1,500 in the first quarter. So we're managing to deal with those slightly older cases. The current figures, we now receiving assistance from the HDA to get updated the data so that we can update our records. There used to be a direct link between the deeds office and the HSS, but since that has failed to deliver, we need to now get outside service providers to assist us to find out which transfers have happened recently. So here are the challenges that we are finding with the title deeds. Just looking at the data cleansing that we have, so on the HSS, the information isn't complete. So we are looking at getting a separate database to confirm all the data that we have and to verify the information, which we then carry on and catch on to the HSS. And that's where the HSS is assisting us. The technical capacity, we've got standing quarterly meetings with all the municipalities, but we're helping them by looking at trying to see if we can assist with them with conveyances and town planners to resolve the issues with title deeds, and also trying to appoint central teams that can assist us with that. And also in terms of hands-on municipal support, if municipalities don't have a dedicated team, then we help by intervening. Just in terms of our quarter one high-level financial and non-financial performance, so in the first quarter on the HSDG grant, we haven't signed off any of the sites. We are on site on most of those projects, but those aren't signed off at this point in time. The houses delivered 753 of the 8463 targeted. Of the expenditure, 22% of the 1.6 to 8 billion. Just in terms of what we received and how it's been drawn down, that gives you an idea of our cash flow from National. Then the area that we spent, City of Cape Town, 88 million of the 308 million put aside, 28%. Provincial project, mainly in the metro, 32% of the 398 million put aside. In the Wynand District, 15% of the 165, Overberg, 18%. Central Karoo, not many projects planned there. They haven't spent any funding yet. 17% in the Garden Route and 25% in the West Coast. On our informal settlement upgrade program, this refers only to the stage 3 informal settlement upgrades, and we haven't signed off any of the sites so far. We do have a serious challenge on one of our sites in Mossel Bay, as I alluded to earlier. And that's how we received the money and spent the money for the year. You can see there the bulk of the funding is being used in the metro on provincial projects. And then also you'll see 37% expenditure in the garden room period as well. That's the full presentation. I'm not sure if my colleagues would like to add or...
Thank you very much. Thank you. I don't know if there is who wants to end or...
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Rob. I think Rob has covered what we'd like to present, but we can respond in terms of any questions the team easier to respond. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, I'll take the hands. It's, one, two, three, four, five, and I'm not.
Let me pause there. Thank you.
take a little bit just to... The issues of investors to present us, we don't have, but we have asked ADA to identify. One answer in two answers in one. What is the making of the South Africa, of course, its landscape. Houses were built, roofed by asbestos. So I fail to understand that presentation there. It's not a city. The flexibility on outdoor and big houses, or let's say, and the like, I think to me it's welcomed. Of course, depending on the assistance you bring to those communities. Because if they feel that their big houses are going to be changed to 40 square meters, then I think that assistance is important. But within that, if I have applied for an RDP house, I have a mud house, what do you do? I qualify, but I'm staying in a mud house. I'm worried to remove my mud house, not mud house, mud house. I'm worried to remove my mud house instead of giving me an RDP. And especially when you talk about those, depending on the size. To me, that there should be flexibility. I'm just adding your flexibility here, a point of flexibility to what you presented. There's an area that we have seen in the media, in the station, railway or transit route, but Western Cape seems to be reluctant to remove the people there or to allocate people differently so that the service of the train can come back. People placed themselves there during COVID. You didn't talk to that. Can you talk to it as well? You know, Chair, the issue of intimidation, extortion, violence in the project that you mentioned, I think it's airport and Mossel Bay that I've seen. It's a failure to negotiate. If you are unable to engage the community, then these kind of things will happen. But if you are transparent and willing to engage the community continuously, these things will not happen because it reflects your transparency and your intervention to uplift them from yesterday to something else in future. So it's really one is difficult to understand. How could people fight while they are being developed? So, to me, I classify that as failure to negotiate. If you give yourself time, sit down and engage with the community. On the flatland, and all those places, you terminated a contract. Not only this one, on all termination, did you suffer any cost whereby you could have paid a contract, a certain amount of work, and then when you have to procure for a new contractor, you find that the cost is now escalated. Can you indicate if you have incurred any cost? On your challenges, you are mentioning EIA. In some instances where the projects have been blocked. Can you further say what did BIA have to do with this? How did you identify the land for it to be used for development? Land acquisition or building, giving people safe stand. I might have missed it, but do you have a specific project in terms of quantity where you have been serviced. Apologies if I missed it. The last 2 points on that thread, I heard you talk about the HDA in the top part. On your expenditure for the first quarter, it looks good. Are there any transfers that we could talk about? It could look good in terms of what you're showing us from the department point of view, but it's hidden for non-performance in the transfers that you have done to other entities. The issue of the title deeds in the Western Cape in 1994, I didn't see exactly the number, but are they going down in terms of assessment? Do you see that probably, could you estimate in the 5 years, would be saying that we are no more dealing with the pre-1994 title deeds? The last one changed my interest. Acacia Park is where I stay. Some of us as members of parliament. There's a development they are offering for informal settlement. And that one is worse than informal settlement. Can you look at it? Because it's growing next to the army there and next to our gate in the Acacia Park. And probably I'll see your movement around there in the coming 2 weeks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation from the acting issue of the director. Whoever issued the good morning to the officials of Woodsing. I was here at 9.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I think the first sentence that was raised in the presentation that there are no asbestos to be removed in the Western Cape. We see them. We stay here. We see them. That there are some, maybe the presenter was perhaps talking about some other areas that do not have within Western Cape. Maybe you should give us clarity. What does that mean? In many of the areas where it is presented with involvement of contractors, continue to say they are complete, they are fine. These are rocky areas, the sabotage. Now, if then that is the environment that the department finds itself in, one would like to know what has the department put in place to normalize the situation. Fighting of contractors, there could be death on that. So it's not something that is right in this government. You should be concerned and say what is it that you can put in place. One issue that maybe one is interested, do you have contractors forum? Do you have stakeholders forum? Will those areas help to normalize the communities within their views? The other area is that rocky area. Are you speaking about rocky in the sense that okay. Now the issue is there no need for people to be settled in that area? Now, if then, what is your plan? Is it an area that is not touchable at all? because of its rocky. And then the people that are staying around about there, who need houses, where do you take them to? The other area is the issue that you say the concentration of your housing development in Western Cape is in the metro. So the surrounding area, it's not an area that you're talking about. I'm therefore saying that you are pulling those people from the periphery of the city and trying to build houses within the city, in the center of the city. That would be nice if that would happen, because that's where infrastructure is and resources is. Maybe you were saying in a different approach. Concentration of housing development is in the metro, not considering the other areas. I just want to get a clarity on that interpretation. What does that mean? I just want to comment again with the absence of the MSC, Chair, if you allow me. The Western Cape is a very, very big area with huge population. And the invitation to have MSCs, because predominantly Parliament is a political structure, and we stay here, and we hear, we see problems. We sort of wanted to hear from our colleagues of what are the issues. We know some of the issues, some of them raised by the Honourable Sadiq. We know some of the issues which perhaps himself could have shared with us, and then we share our experience and how best. So I take the apology, Chair, but in pain, was wanted to engage with him on some of the issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to emphasize the point that has been raised by Honorable Zengi of the developing informal settlement, which is taking place right at the gate of Acacia Park. It's not safe, even for us, members of Parliament, not only members of Parliament, even the staff members that are staying in Acacia Village. You know, as we go out there, going to the nearest shopping complex, which is far, you don't know what will happen, whether you'll be mugged by thugs or what. It just draws a very, you know, bad picture of our country, of how Western Cape is governed. I'm hoping you'll take that very seriously. And another thing is that I heard you speak of one of the challenges of you not having land or suitable land, you know, to build houses for the people or for the people who are staying in informal settlement. If you have to relocate them, you do not have any suitable land. The only suitable land that you can see that you think could be used to build those houses, I mean those people houses, is in the remote areas or the periphery of Western Cape, where the place is going to be very costly if you have to develop that place and build houses for our people. But my question is, you do have suitable land. Then this suitable land that you do have, who does that suitable land belong to? Or, you know, who are the people that are supposed to either build houses there in that suitable land? Is this suitable land only accessible to the rich people who are able or who can buy it and develop the area or even maybe build themselves houses? Or even a few middle class people, parents who can afford to buy land there. What about the majority of the poor black people who cannot afford to buy land in Western Cape, because as far as I know, you will correct me if I'm not correct. As far as I know, is that land, especially the suitable land that you spoke of, is only accessible for the rich because it's very expensive. It's not accessible to the indigenous people, majority of the indigenous people of our country. To the extent that people who do not stay in our country, who use pounds and who use dollars, are the ones instead who come to our country and find the suitable land in Western Cape, because they are able to convert their dollars and pounds into rents. This land becomes so accessible to them. They afford this land. And only to find that most of the time, they are not staying in our country. They are in their countries. They only come here for holiday purpose, or maybe use those houses for whatever reasons. But our people are struggling. They can't have land in Western Cape, because land in Western Cape, the suitable one, is not meant for the poor black majority. Can't you at least make sure that you give first preference to the people of South Africa? You make sure that when you sell this land, you do not sell it at the same price as you sell it to these people who use pounds and dollars to buy it. You make sure that you sell it at a price that majority of maybe our working class can be able to buy it. Please consider that. And then at the beginning of the presentation, I've also seen that you stated that you have not identified houses which asbestos houses which need replacement. Then my question is, are there no houses in Western Cape that are made of asbestos? Or on purpose, you decided not to identify these asbestos houses, because the people is given. The people that are staying in these asbestos houses do not matter because of the color of their skin. And remember, this asbestos is very hazardous to health. And for how many years, you know, the democracy, our people have been staying in these houses. And then we thought maybe after democracy, these asbestos roofs will be removed, so that at least our people could stop developing diseases such as lung cancer and, lung diseases and cancer. Can you please clarify me with regard to that point? And then how soon how soon are you going to make sure that those asbestos houses are identified and the asbestos is removed? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I welcome the report of the Western Cape Province in this afternoon. Chairperson, could the department provide information on the responses to the challenge of land invasion, illegal occupation, and the construction mafia in the Western Cape? And also, in the Western Cape, the NSC of the Western Cape have identified land parcel to drive this program. If yes, how far from places where there are economic opportunities? Secondly, how is the province going to assist the community to self-build, as we need that access to technical support remains a challenge? And Chairperson, I didn't hear about the issue of Southern Cape. We have an issue here there that on the 1st of August 2022, in Southern Cape region, we have 600 people where they evicted and left homeless in the cold water, in the cold weather of August. So as the province, the provincial department, what are the key preparation towards those people? Regarding of the engagement with the informal settlement, what is the provincial department doing in
recurring engagement between COVID-19 community, City of Cape Town and Cape Nature in resolving the land release and provision of basic services. Are they waiting for disaster to take place before they act? Another question. So give the alarming rise in informality, homelessness and informal settlement. What is the provincial department plan in response to this? Within the pronouncement around policy shift on providing top structures to save the site through rapid land release, what is the position of the province in this regard? In that this province has been particularly quiet on this issue. And does the department have any new plan or ideas to tackle the current challenges experienced in informal settlement, or you are maintaining site and service held by her predecessors? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome, Kelly. I would like to welcome the detail in this presentation. The province has provided more of a deep dive into the individual block projects, which I think is appreciated by the committee, because we're able to actually understand on a project-by-project basis. I share my colleague's concerns around the opening slide that deals with asbestos in my old constituency, well, my previous constituency, which was Atlantis and Maori in the west, on the west coast of the city of Cape Town. In extension 13, there were a huge number of homes with asbestos roofs, and those homes haven't been dealt with yet. So I think that analysis and investigation needs to be expedited by the provincial department and the government of Metropolitan Municipality. Then we've heard from our colleagues, and it's an ongoing issue in the media around land availability, especially in the city of Cape Town because of the geography of Cape Town. 2 weeks ago, the Department of Public Works, the Minister of the Department of Public Works, announced publicly that she had released 44 land parcels. Now, we know that public land, the custodian of public land is DWI. I just wanted to find out from the provincial department, the announcement by Minister Patricia de Lille that 44 land parcels were released for human settlements development to the HDA. Has any engagement happened between the provincial HDA or the provincial Department of Public Works or the National Department of Public Works and the provincial Department of Human Settlements on where this land is, when it will be released, if it can be fast-tracked for development? Details around that would be appreciated. Then the issue of land invasions has become a significant crisis across South Africa. It gets a disproportionate amount of media attention in Cape Town for various political reasons. But it is hampering the city of Cape Town and the provincial administration's ability to unblock projects and to deliver projects on time. I just wanted to find out, does the provincial department, and I think it would have been useful if the MEC had been here because this is potentially more of a question from a political world perspective. So if the HOD is unable to answer the question, I do understand. But is the department planning on promulgating any provincial legislation to deal with illegal land invasions? We know that the Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act as it stands requires a formal eviction order where land is invaded and occupants have been living on it for longer than 6 months. Government has to then provide alternative accommodation. And this is being used as a political tool by a number of organizations to enable people who don't qualify, haven't been waiting on the Human Settlements Demand Database, for as long as patient law-abiding South Africans to jump in the housing queue. In the city of Cape Town, we saw with the Woodstock Hub versus Komodo judgment that The court actually ordered the City of Cape Town to provide alternative accommodation to the evictees within a specific kilometre radius. It was a city centre accommodation that was ordered. Now we all know how expensive that is. It would be wonderful if all of us in this room could afford to own a flat in the Cape Town CBD, and yet the court is instructing the City of Cape Town to provide these illegal land occupants with housing in this area, obviously being appealed. It's derailing pretty much every metropolitan municipality's housing supply plan and project plan. We know that there's no imminent plan from national to bring an amendment to the Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act at the national level, but this can be handled provincially as well. Is there any plan from the Western Cape provincial government to promulgate something to deal with it at a provincial level? Then lastly, title deeds. I note what has been presented to the committee around title deeds, and we see the situation replicated across South Africa, but I am aware that the Western Cape provincial government has recently developed some kind of a smart app and is in the process of doing a data integrity cleanup. Can we just have a little bit more information about how this will assist in tackling the title deeds backlog? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Chair, the one point that when I said the failure to stop violence and protest, failure to negotiate, there's another failure. The issue of bulk infrastructure as a reason to stop the project, in my vocabulary, it's not a reason. It's not a reasonable reason. Because for any project, you have known the in and out, the milestones and everything as you do that project. So that you are preparing yourself on whether there will be bulk infrastructure or not. So please give us another reason. Or when you put infrastructure as a reason, it should state why did you reach at that level. Municipality said there was money problems, they said there was no money. But these things are committed. You signed documents on these matters. Thank you.
And before, okay, there's only HOD here. All right, normally what I do HOD, I give the HOD to respond, then when the HOD is done, I give it to the MEC, the voter principal to speak, then the DG and the deputy minister president. But because the MEC is not here, I'll give it, it will be you, then the DG, then the DM. Then.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions. If it's okay with you, some of my team members will answer some of the questions, if you could go back. Okay, so let me start with the title deeds.
Sorry, before you start, so to tell you, we've also agreed that your responses must not be longer than the presentation. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, that is the intention. Let's start with the title deeds question. It is a serious challenge, especially in terms of capacity. So what we have done within the department, we've institutionalized how we responded. Before this, we split all over the place. P-1994 would be on one side, post-2014 on the other side. We've now put together a faculty plan, and our intention is that within the next 3 years, and yes, the 3 years is still too long, but within the next 3 years, we will begin to clean up the data. Our expectation is that there's significant undercounting in terms of the transfers. So how do we clean up that counting? How do we clean up the HSX? And we put a process in place. As we speak now, our teams are actually out in the field speaking to the different municipalities. We've identified the 7 biggest contributors to the title deed backlogs, and we want to focus on those 7 municipalities because by doing that, we'll bring down the backlog significantly. So our plan to answer the question is that within the next 3 years, we will see significant drops in the title deed backlog. In terms of the app, I'm going to ask Benjamin quickly just to give some feedback on the app. It's not specifically aimed at title deed, though, but I think it would be quite useful for him to do that. I just want to go through and let my team know quite quickly how to respond.
after Benjamin, we'll have David. David, is that, I think that is the planning. David will speak to the land identification, integration in terms of inner city and land availability and land on the periphery. I also would like him to speak to what our NGOs are currently doing through the NGO framework and how we've been engaging with informal settlements in that aspect. We'll also speak to some of the statutory processes and the committees that we have in terms of the planning, the EIAs and those kinds of questions. I'm happy to just give some information on our enhanced service site policy that we're busy working on at the moment. And then the project that was mentioned is Cedarbed. That's quite an interesting project. Maybe you can give some feedback on that as well. And then for David, also the land parcels far from economic opportunities, if you can mention that. Then we'll hand over to Heinrich, who's acting as our director of land and asset administration. He'll provide some input on the land invasion questions. And then the legislation question, which we are pursuing. The City of Cape Town is working quite closely with us as well, but Heinrich will give us some information there. He'll speak to the rapid land release and the issues that we've spoken to with, we're in contact, constant contact with the HDA and our national colleagues. He'll provide some information there. And then I also just wanted to give some kind of overview in terms of the land and the challenges that we see in the Western Cape, just to bring some context into ownership and issues that have been raised there. Rob, I think if you can please just answer the question on expenditure in the first quarter and if any transfers existed, and then the rest of the questions will be answered by our Chief Director, Human Settlement Implementation, because much of it relates to implementation challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, actually. The app was developed primarily to assist with the application for registering a housing unit. It was a system or a tool that we created to assist those who want to apply the government of their housing. You don't have to travel to distances and other things. It is looking basically to assist those who apply to update their information or also apply as a unit. That's what it is. That's your question.
Thank you. I think from my side, in terms of the land availability, we embark on any group of housing projects that we develop in Western Cape. We embark on a certain of projects, and that needs to utilize the SDF, special development framework of the municipality of the state within the Cape Town. And this has also led to the identification of housing development areas, which has helped in demarcating where investment should go. So those are the drivers of human settlement development that we would focus on in Western Cape. In terms of the statutory processes and statutory requirements for projects, EIA is an environmental impact assessment. That's what we refer to. Sometimes the complexity around EIA takes longer time in terms of understanding what to do and how to do it. So there's an ongoing engagement with our sister department, the deputy, to unblock and to unlock projects that are blocked due to statutory process. In terms of enhanced service site, I think that's where we're navigating our approach to, and to be able to release service site at an accelerated pace. One of the things that we are doing is to move some of our projects that are meant for BNG substructure and migrate them into service sites so that we can release at pace. Fredabase, that was mentioned earlier in the presentation, is one of an example that we're looking at, that we use it as a decanting site for informal settlement upgrading. So that's one area. And we have also, I think there was a question that asked where have we done service sites before. I think we've done it in West Coast. We can go to Sibanya informal settlement in Maurice Bay. We've seen it in Clava in West Coast. We've seen it around as well. And some of the projects that are under the ISUPG, the informal settlement project, predominantly, majority of them are heading and stopping at 10 stages, service site. So that's what we have. In terms of development far from the inner city, I think as I mentioned earlier, the assessment done by municipality and the department leads to getting projects within inner city. If you look at the pocket of presentation presented in there, all the projects that were listed as block, some of them are within airport precinct, is within urban fabric, is within the urban area. So those are the things that we're doing, and we also trying to change the narrative so that we able to turn the tide against special agency that we inherited. That's it from me.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Andrew Horsett, to the chair, members of the acting deputy. With regard to the land issue, I think I need to start with, without land you can't do anything, and we all know that, we all appreciate that. And through the MEC office, we have requested land from the National Department of Infrastructure, including some old projects where the project has already been developed, but the property was still in the ownership of National Public Works, and that person has been leased to eventually to the municipality. But we also asked for, requested for new land, well located land within the city of Capital specifically, and that's, you know that's the Wingfield and the Youngfield and Rose type of properties, which if we are able to obtain that, that will be greatly appreciated, and we can develop it for thousands of people. And we are still waiting for a reply on those larger tracts of land. Recently, yes, the National Department of Public Works Infrastructure indicated that they leased 44 pieces of land, of which 4 is in the Western Cape. And I think you just had a look at it, and one is the Drift Sands property, and the Drift Sands property is also invaded to a large extent, which has other aspects of development that need to be taken care of, but also it also relates to 2 properties in Paul and one in Stellenbosch, which the minister can correct that it has already been developed, and that will lead to the eventual transfer of the property that has had these being beneficiaries. I think in general, just a matter of with regard to the rapid release of land to individuals, what that means is this whole site and service drive again, and I think from a commerce point of view and from a project point of view, more of projects or less structures will be built, and more properties will be able to be transferred to individuals on a site and service basis. Thank you.
Around whether funding has been transferred to the housing development agency in the first quarter. No funding in the first quarter, but we only reimburse on the project management work that they do or the planning work that is done on our property. So there's no funding that's paid as an implementing agent on that. So nothing in the first quarter.
Good afternoon, Chair and members, GM colleagues. I will respond to the rest of the questions, and I do apologize on this for not referring to you by your last name. I missed the introduction, so I will just go in the order of questions. Starting with the first question from the first member that posed the question, asked about the sabotage and protest. Do we have steering committees? We do have steering committees, but what we find is that the construction mafia, guiding themselves as business forum, they then tend to be the ones that are instigating. To the extent that the TIACOM that we work very closely with, they also get scared. Case in point, Boys Town. I think we had
4-5 fatal shootings on that project. And it got to a point where the steering committee members were scared to also push back and actually stop what was happening. And we're seeing it throughout. We're finding that the CECOMs are working very well with us, but they're scared because of the extent of the violence and militancy that we see on the site. And linking that to the question that was asked, whether or not us reporting to SAPS, we have seen any improvement, what happens is that it just shifts to another site. For example, when it started in Ward 116, which is the ESC receive area. When we reported it there, it just moved and emerged from in another different location. And to the extent that now we had to agree to a mutual termination with the contractor in Kukulik, sadly enough, where they we really need to provide other opportunities. The contractor says it's just untenable. They could not, because what happened there, chair members, is that during broad daylight, the site manager was approached and was shot at both legs. And what the person said was that this is just a warning, the next time it will be your coffin that comes out. So that is what then put the nail in the coffin. And how what we're trying to do now is in our tender documentation to ensure that we ask the service provider to build in security more than just somebody that will stand at the gate with the basin. But what that does is that it will of course take away from the money that we set aside to provide housing opportunities. Unfortunately, it has gotten to that point. Those logo, we have terminated. We can't, unfortunately, continue with that project because the areas that we had unlocked and opened up, because what we were doing, that was an in-situ upgrading project. We would open up the areas, move people, qualifying beneficiaries to a temporary relocation area, and then once we built, move them back in. And what ended up happening is that the areas that we have opened up, those were sold and they were then invaded. Now we actually do not have any area to decamp the people to. The only sites that are available for decamping are way outside of the parameters, and of course we understand that you can't relocate people to a temporary area some 30, 40 kilometers away from where they are. So that's the challenge that we have in Joe's local. Issue of land expropriation within the city for human settlement, where the opportunity arises and presents itself for us to expropriate, we certainly are doing that. In actual fact, case in point, in the conversations and the deliberations with the Housing Development Agency, where we're looking at acquiring land to relocate people off the central line, for Prasa, the landowners were actually asking crazy amounts, and the directive that was issued to HDA was that if they're not prepared to accept the offer based on valuation, we should push for expropriation. So we have expropriated, for example, and successfully so in the George area, where the owner was sitting somewhere in Namibia and we needed that land, we went for the expropriation and successfully so, and we managed to actually build for our community. And I think the issue where you're asking why have there been no service sites in the first quarter, it's always a concern whenever we come to report because the reporting for the first quarter is usually very low, and that is because the manner in which we record the sites that have been fully serviced when they have got access to water, sanitation, and of course roads. And what ends up happening in the first quarter is that we're not able to sign off because all those issues have not been ticked off in the municipality, have not tested the infrastructure and taken that over. So then in the second, third, and fourth quarter, that's when we start seeing the numbers increasing. But I do want to stress that we are having a challenge in terms of the provision of the service that is related to some of the issues that was added we expanded on by my colleague Rob. Irregularities in terms of the block project, no, there have not been any. There are no irregularities on the block project. The issues are just some of our communities that are refusing to relocate, and it's mainly the small-scale farmers on the panel side and in Flagelline, but it has nothing to do with the irregularities in terms of the grant that we receive from national that we expected to apply for housing opportunities. And on the asbestos issue, yes, I do agree. We also do have a pre-planned support stock, a large part of it is asbestos, and I think that has been shared throughout the meeting. And what we have committed to do, and I think Member Powell, we do take the point that we need to expedite the analysis, and we have sought the assistance from the Housing Development Agency to assist us in that analysis, because I do know that the DM actually asked us to also expedite that at the previous next meeting. So it's something that's on our radar, and we'll certainly look at expediting that. Issue of the mud houses and what happens when you apply for a mud house. Do we then, must we demolish the mud house? Why can't we build the RDP? What usually happens to those beneficiaries who qualify for RDP but are living in a mud house is that we often have to use the same development footprint. So they own that site on which that mud house is on. So we're not able to then build the RDP, the PNG house, and still keep the mud house because we're limited by the actual size of the where we're able to still keep that mud house and build the BNG house, we would be able to do so. But unfortunately, because of the limitation of the site itself, where we have to build for that, where we have to build the BNG, we're not able to still keep the mud house. But we try to the best that we can to accommodate and be flexible. There was an issue around with failure to negotiate with communities. I think I've already responded to this. We do engage with the communities, and as I've indicated, some of them, they really do work well with us. For example, the recent unrest on the upgrading of informal settlements in Mossel Bay, where it saw destruction of a temporary relocation area that was built at $29 million. It's new people that came in late that were not part of the service of the steering committee, which is why then the councillors as a collective agreed to address the matter. But when we did an analysis and got the names of the instigators, we found that it's actually new people that were never part of that. So there is commitment to deal with that particular issue. Flakeland, do we suffer any losses? Will we be terminated? Yes, there are losses that we suffer. For example, if you've got houses that are at different stages and you have to bring in a new contractor, that contractor will have to factor in carrying on and completing somebody else's work as a premium. But we usually offset that against the retention money that we hold. So when we terminate a contract due to poor performance, we usually keep a certain percentage per certificate, 5% on a month-to-month. So that money does not get released to the contractor. We actually use that as a contribution towards finishing off the work and whatever premium. But in all instances, we've always had to pay a little bit more. The issue of Acacia Park informal settlement, will certainly pick that conversation up with our colleagues at the City of Cape Town. And also understand, and also we'll have to engage with colleagues from the National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, as that property is actually managed by them, they're the custodians. But we've taken note of that, and we certainly picked up that conversation with the colleagues from the City of Cape Town, and we will undertake to do some site visits so that we just familiarize ourselves with what is going on within that precinct. The question around the Clan William, is it a rocky area? The challenge there is that the geological underlying condition is rocky. So when the contractors have to go and excavate, in certain instances, they've had to use dynamite so that they can make sure that they dig to put in the pipelines that are required. So that's the challenge. How we mitigate that? We don't remove people from there because we understand that they settled there. We cannot therefore relocate them elsewhere. But what it means is that it's going to cost us a little bit more than the prescribed amount in the quantum, because the National department issues in quantum, which is a guideline for a service site, for example, it's sitting at about 45,000. It would enter take 60,000. What it means with the raw criteria is that there's a premium that we have to pay. It's called the ground conditions are that much difficult to work with, but we actually upgrade it where they are supposed to relocate them. There was a question around whether why I'm concentrating in the metro, are we therefore intending to pull people from the territory and build within the city? I think the comment around the concentration in the metro is that the biggest demand in terms of our waiting list, we're currently sitting at about 78,000 of that, 70% of the people who have indicated a need are within the metro. So that's where the biggest pressure is. We still continue to assist communities in the non-metro areas, and where we're able to, we make sure that we build closer to social economic amenities where there are no social economic amenities. Fortunately, the grant allows us to utilize a portion towards the construction of social economic amenities. So we do encourage municipalities to actually apply for those social economic amenities because we do want to build integrated human settlements and move away just from there was an issue around the land from the member that it would seem that people with the pound and the dollar, they are the ones that dictate the property market. I'm not going to shy away from that for the Western Cape and Cape Town, that is the reality, especially when you're talking about the properties in your well-established suburb. But what I think as a sector we have done, you recall that there was a property that SABC in Seaport was putting up for sale. And the National Minister interdicted the process. Long story short, that was acquired by the Housing Development Agency, and it will be developed for social housing. And from the Western Cape government point of view, there is also a property next to the Civic Center that will also be released for social housing. And we've also identified other pockets within the inner city that will be releasing for social housing. So to the extent that we're able to, we do actually make sure that those properties are reserved for social housing purposes. The challenges around land invasion and construction, Marcia, I think I alluded to that. There was a question around Cape Nature and particularly the COVID-19 informal settlements and the provision of service. Western Cape government set up a task team comprising of Cape Nature, our department, City of Cape Town, for the purposes of looking at a solution for the provision of services within the COVID-19 informal settlement. Of course, the challenge there is that the bulk of that settlement is within the wetland, and therefore provision of services will naturally be a challenge. But the task team is working on that to try and find a solution with the City of Cape Town. City of Cape Town will have to come on board just in terms of the role and the responsibilities and the mandate as far as the provision of basic services is concerned. But we'll be happy to provide feedback to the committee at an opportune time in terms of the progress that has been made so far and the provision of services at COVID-19 is concerned. But I do want to qualify by saying it is a challenge given the fact that it is in a wet land largely. Land release program, I think Hans responded to that. The issue of the land parcel, I think that was responded to the legislation. I think Andrew, you also touched on that, and the smart echo was addressed. I think Chair members are trying to cover all the questions. If there's any question that I've missed out, please do remind me, and I apologize. Yeah. And Chair Anderson,
I still want to know if the Human Settlement Department in Cape Town is prepared to lower the prices of land
to the people of South Africa who cannot afford to buy expensive land where you have said you have suitable land. And then you haven't answered that question of identifying asbestos houses. You only spoke of mud houses. And as you were responding to our questions, I'm happy, I commend you for identifying suitable land in George, which has been occupied or bought by somebody staying in Namibia, and you were able to expropriate it for our people in South Africa. So, in addition to that, have you done any audit of suitable land in Western Cape whereby you find that that land is owned by people who are staying in South Africa, and then that land is laying there, you know, it's not benefiting any of the people of South Africa. Are you also going, after making an, if you have done an audit, what are you going to do about it? If you have not, are you going to make any audit, and then are you also going to expropriate that land, because it must benefit the people of South Africa, not people somewhere who are just, you know, waiting maybe for the right time to sell it at a higher profit to the people of South Africa. Thank you.
Yeah, you can respond. Don't take 2 hours again.
No.
Okay.
I'll be very brief. On the first question, number on lowering the price of land in South Africa, and unfortunately, that's the aspect that falls outside the department's mandate. It's highly regulated in terms of the supply and demand, but where we do intervene is we identify land that's well located and reserve that for social housing and flip or choose the Help Me Buy a Home policy that David Cheney alluded to. That is our indirect contribution. For example, we bought land in House Bay with assistance of the Housing Development Agency, and there was much resistance there. Our contribution to that would be we are going to develop a mixed-use development that will cater for people earning between 0 and 22,000, who would then ultimately be able to have title in an area of Half Bay that was previously reserved for people, for the whites, if I mean the way to be frank. So that's our indirect contribution. The issue of regulating prices and showing it falls outside our mandate, we're not able to then directly influence those costs. Asbestos houses, I indicated that, as requested by Member Powell, we will expedite the process of doing that analysis. We accept that there are those in our four houses that have got asbestos, and I think that the previous technique I can make in give an undertaking that over the MTEF budget, we would have to start prioritizing and seeing how to really then phase that. And I think that the DM indicated that it was something that would have to be implemented over time, given the number of houses that have got asbestos, but we've taken that, we accept, and we will prioritize member. And on the audit of suitable land in the Western Cape that's owned privately that we could acquire, we haven't done that audit. That audit has only been limited to those land parcels that are along the transport corridors that we have identified for human settlement development, and we have managed to acquire those to the Housing Development Agency, and it's along the transport corridors. But I can't say we've done a whole lot of all land parcels in Western Cape. Again, we dictated to by the land that falls within those priority development housing areas that are in line with our development structure. So we have done that, and we have actually purchased those through the Housing Development Agency. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will quickly just make 4 points. The first one is in terms of the data integrity in the HFS. The second is addressing the
some of the projects that were listed there, they are indicated as blocked, but also they are closed. So that is, we're moving in the right direction. The service size and the zero plan for the current financial year, this is not in line with the priorities of the human settlement sector, as we are subtracting the service size because not everybody wants to be given a house. So those that can build for themselves, they need to have access to the service size. So this one is not in line with the priorities of the sector. Block projects has been addressed, so then the information will be addressed so that it can be managed appropriately. The last one, Chairperson, is in terms of the shootings in the projects. We have observed that the mushrooming of the business forums in all the provinces. Let me also indicate, Chairperson, that this matter has been elevated to the justice cluster. To see how they can assist the human settlement sector in combating such economic crime. So that is receiving the attention for all the provinces. That's how it will be dealt with. Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if Mary Chen has got anything to add.
Thanks, Jim. Chair, just to indicate, the issue around the question of public works and infrastructure, Chair, I think we need to be clear. Public works and infrastructure have not said that they're not amenable to utilizing the land. The point about it is between ourselves, the IMC, which is chaired by the Deputy President, we've indicated that given the centrality of that land, it's not only that, it's not only specific to this province, so we must not make it seem like it's only specific to this province. There's a need for both the national department, both DWI, and rural development and land reform to ensure that the land that is made available is utilized for specifically poor, low-income households, so that it does not end up in many instances where it does not result in integration. I think it's also important to note, and at some point this will settle down in people, that the two pieces of land, for example, Wingfield and Youngsfield, the one is occupied by defense. And the way it works is that unless the Department of Defense, which is a client department, allows for it or agrees that it can be released, and it is surplus and not to be utilized for state purposes, then it can be made available. And we've made this clear, Chair, on numerous occasions around this. But I think we just need to be clear about that. At the appropriate time, I suppose, we could, through the Office of the Minister and DM, bring a report with DWI and explain what we are doing in relation to that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'll speak on two issues, Chair. There is an issue that was raised by committee in terms of people that are qualified to be removed from the railway facility. We had a meeting, I think a week or 2 weeks ago, myself, the minister, and the mayor of the city of Cape Town. Regarding the land which Department of Transport wants to revive the railway line, and we're told that there are people that are there that do not want to be removed. But we ended up in that meeting saying we must get a facilitator or somebody who's going to negotiate with those people so that they are removed peacefully so that we could. So that one is being attended to. And it was the agreement between the us and the city of Cape Town that we will do that. We still have to get the report whether they succeeded or not, Chair, concerning the land which is supposed to be used by Department of Transport. And Chair, I think one thing that it is coming from all provinces is the issue of we're not doing well in terrorism. And it's clear all provinces are not doing well in terrorism. Maybe we should come up with other ways of making sure that with the DTM, we're going to assist them to facilitate the process. And again, the issue of the infrastructure, Chair, with all provinces, it is a challenge. And it's something that we need to look at in terms of giving them support in terms of funding so that they don't build houses without bulk infrastructure, because it's a problem. Bulk infrastructure, it's water, sanitation, and you can't build a house without those. Those are very important for all houses. But Chair, let me take, because I'm looking at the time now, let me take this opportunity and thank you, Chair, and all of members for giving us time to come and present. These are the last three provinces that came to you. For your time, Chair, I'm thanking also, and also you are helping us to identify where we're weak, Chair. You go back again to the provinces, sit down, and when you come back, we'll come back stronger than before, Chair. Thank you very much, members and the Chair.
Thank you very much. You write it down. You write it down.
Question. Just to request that Namibian observation.
Oh.
That information.
No, thanks for that. I think there's two things that I picked up that we, I think as a team, we need to work on. It might not only be human settlement here. I think we need to involve other colleagues. The issue of the construction mafia is a big issue everywhere, whether it's basic education, whether it's human settlement or infrastructure. It can't be that we agree that there's illegal, the state agrees that there's illegal operations in the country, and we see the meetings and speak about it like in a normal way. Now, I think we, when we, the cluster and all of you admit and deal with this, because it can't be that there's such a situation and the next thing we wake up in the morning, they've taken over the whole country. We need to speak up about that, because it needs to be delivered. It can't be a normal discussion. The issue of taking this, maybe we must workshop with the honorable members, maybe we must find time at DM, but for that workshop, was as a politician sitting here, my thinking is that a taking this, when you build a house, build for someone. Now, it must be an easy process of transfer of ownership. When the person moves in, you give them a taking this, they stay in the house. Now, if somebody from 1994 until now was still delivering a taking this, something that while you are building the house, while you're preparing the transfer of ownership, I don't understand. But maybe it's a technical matter to it, which might need to be enacted on it, on how the process can take to be 8 years. But when you buy your own house, DM, immediately after you buy the house, when you're, if you're taking a bond, when you're done paying the bond, they move the ownership to you, they tell you it takes six weeks. But when is your house that you're building by your own government, takes 28 years, then there's a problem. We need to find a way and create a system that works. But it can't be that all nine provinces have the same problem of taking deeds. Everywhere taking deeds is the biggest problem. Now, also, the issue of the land, I agree. I think the Western Cape has done well on the issue of the Namibian owner who's sitting there in Namibia on the land. Given an opportunity, DM, I want us to discuss an issue where we're taken to court by taking the land that is not used.
Yes.
We need to deal with those issues, but we've taken it. It is not used. People are not saying, even the owners of the land, sometimes some of these owners of the land don't even know where is the land. They boast about it in other countries that there was some land in South Africa. Where people who stay in South Africa don't even have a place to stay. Now, I think we must deal with those issues, and that will have support of our people if we do things that benefit them. Because we do it for the benefit of the people of South Africa. But anyway, honorable members, thank you very much. We had a very fruitful meeting. Thank you for coming. I know we're from virtual platform, but we've agreed as a committee that at least the ones of provinces, let's try to make them to be physical. Maybe we'll meet again for other discussions, because while we're still here, we need to work together as a team to try to resolve all of these problems we're faced with. Thank you. Everything is closed.
What is the obsession, right? Right? What's the location of the I can tell you something. I know. Because the guy is talking about it. That is like informal discussion that is taking place. So now it's very bad. You know that. You know that.